Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM. I'm the creme de la creme, ultimate drip, cherry on top, icing on the cake, the whole cake. I'm the table where the cake is chilling, and I'm definitely the tiles with the table, the cake, the icing, and the cherry on top are chilling. How about that? Ladies and gentlemen, today is a whooping wonderful Wednesday and evening. Wednesday evening, okay? It is not daytime, it is nighttime, okay? And it is 2 minutes past nine, and you are with yours truly. Yours truly is the also phenomenon and also spectacular Elizabeth, but they call me the matriarch during the week, and Elizabeth is only for weekends. Hey, it is one of those double personality shandies. So we're gonna be talking about, we're gonna be closing off our chapter of bad habits, right? Because I think that, by now, we got it. We got it, okay? So we got bad habits, and we should change these bad habits to become something else, and get to do away with them. Sorry, let me just count my money. to do away with them and then just let them go. And the idea is to acknowledge and to understand and to see that these are bad habits. These are bad things that we do. We procrastinate. I'm going to do it later. I'm going to do it tomorrow. And then all of these tomorrows and the laters come and you are still just chilling in bed. What are you doing? I'm on the cell phone. Oh, what are you doing? I'm just, you know, scrolling the internet. What are you doing? I'm just counting dinero. Okay. That dinero partner, it's not really a bad habit, that one. Mara. It is a bad habit when you become addicted to the idea of always having chelete. Because the day that you don't have chelete, friend, the day that you don't have chelete, it's not going to go well for you there. It's not going to go well if you don't have the Neomas, if you don't have the Hendrix. I saw this meme the other day that said, oh, I miss Hendrix Witboy so much. Can somebody just send me a $200? I just want to see his face. I'm like, hey, girls. Hey, you people are very, yeah, you guys have motive. I like this. You guys are very motivated when it comes to the hustle. Eh, you can hustle even your inbox people. You can hustle even your status watch people. You can hustle them and hustle them and hustle them and hustle them. Mara, I'm just saying. Sometimes we get addicted. Sometimes we have these bad habits. And obviously some of these bad habits are not intentional. They are not things that we are born with. They are not like you just woke up and you're like, I want to have a bad habit. I'm thinking of having a bad habit. What do you think I should have? Like, what bad habit do you think I can pick up, you know, to really make my life exciting? It's not like that. Not unless like there's something wrong with you where you wake up and you're like, I'm looking for a bad habit. I'm looking for a bad habit. I just want to have a bad habit. Not unless that's what you want. You know, Schmiggle side effects. Not unless that is what you want and you're thinking of a precious. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the bad habits that you have that you don't really know you have? But then along the years, right, you realize, Kuchamara, this one is a bad habit. Now, how about the time that you're so stressed and you're keeping everything inside and you're just, you know, bottling it all up? It's nothing. And then one day it just explodes. What's that? That's a bad habit. Holding tension. That's a bad habit. That's a bad habit. So today we're going to be talking about health and wellness habits, right? Bad ones that we don't even know that they exist. Now, the idea is to tackle your inner thoughts. The idea is to tackle my inner thoughts, because sometimes, right, I go through these things and I'm like, who am I going to talk to? Eh? My friends are going to be like, yeah, but that's all part of the process. I'm like, that's not the answer I want. I want us to go in depth. You know, one of my deepest cravings in my life is deep and open conversations. Oh. I'm a sucker for those ones. Let's just have a conversation. I love talking substance and I love talking like meaningful things. And that's why you can see that you can have a phone call with me and we can talk for an hour, because I want to know what makes you smile. I like to know. So I can be the that and more. I like to know. like to know what turns you cry. Yeah, we're not going to turn you whatever or turns you cry, whatever. We're not doing that one. But I like to know. I am highly intrigued and I am very fascinated by human beings. I love human beings. I think that we are phenomenal. Each and every one of us. I think that, we have so much to offer if we stop grasping things, right, from a level of defense and from a level of an argument or from a level of being cornered, and we really hear conversations. There was a question that I posed the other day, and the question that I posed was, is it because I'm saying it that you don't understand? That one was deep. One of my, let me just cut to this one, because sometimes the thoughts, they are running, you know, and we walk with ancestors, so the ancestors are also just like, say this one. This one is also nice. Take it from this angle. Ooh, one of my ancestors must have been a psychologist, guys, because whoa, because I can psychology the hell out of you. So, There is this bad habit, right, that most of us have with people we know. Think about it. Just grasp it. Just take it in the way I'm telling you. Just before you get defensive and before you feel cornered and before any of that, right? There's this sense of defense, or there's this sense of you ain't nothing, that we have towards people that are in our lives. For example, because it's your mother that's telling you don't go out, you will go out. And the only reason that you are going out is because your mother said don't go out, because she specifically said it. Now, if that uncle of yours that you respect his opinion and you respect them and you like them, and they tell you don't go out tonight, you know, it's not about how she said it, because the message is the message. And I think that we should stop being overly sensitive about how things are said, even though how things are said and what was said are two different things, because I'm very sensitive with the specific words that you use. Right. And then also I have most now this rebuttal thing of if you're going to show me flames, I'm going to show you flames. And then like, let's just burn the whole thing down then. Because if we are not hearing each other and we are not grasping each other here, right, then let's just burn the whole thing down. Let it just go down in smoke. Then let us all just be casualties of war. So now, if this uncle tells you, I don't want you to go out today, and your mother says, I don't want you to go out today, you're not going to listen to your mother, but you listen to your uncle. Why are you listening to your uncle? You are listening to your uncle because your uncle is your uncle, and you're not listening to your mother because your mother is your mother, right? Now, there's that bad habit that we have, the bad habit of not listening to people simply because they're close to us. It's just the same as somebody will not support your business just because it's you. Not because your product sucks. Not because your service sucks. Not because your prices are way too high or way too low. Because apparently too low of a price is also a bad thing. Apparently. And not because of anything, but just on the sole purpose that it is your business, we will not support it. Just because it is you. That is owning that business, will not support it. And that is why I keep telling entrepreneurs, stop plastering your face all over your business, because you don't know who secretly hates you. You don't know who secretly is not rooting for you. You don't know who is your enemy, because snakes slither, and they slither and they hiss, friend. And sometimes they call you friend, and sometimes they call you cuz, and sometimes they call you sis, and sometimes they call you brother. And sometimes self-sabotage is also a thing. And sometimes sabotage from the outside is also a thing. And this was, I have been naive for a very long time. I think I think my sense of being naive, right, comes from my innate need to see the goodness in people. So I have got this deep need to assume that everybody has a good side. Everybody is worthy and everybody deserves kindness and love and to be understood and to be heard. Everybody deserves it. Now, I was naive for a very long time. For the most part of my life, I have always been naive. So I can be told like, yeah, that person is trash. And I'm like, no, no, they're just going through stuff. And then they show me that they're trash. And I'm like, maybe today was a bad day. And then they show me again and show me again and show me again. And then the fourth time I'm like, yeah, nah. Elizabeth, no change, man. Change. What's wrong with you? Change, right? And this is like my kind of naive. I think that I put this, I would call it like an armor, or I would put it as a shield, right? To not get hurt or to either allow others to hurt me, right? Because I know that nobody is perfect. This is inevitable. I know that nobody is perfect. And only recently did I realize that actually these are traits of perfectionism. Yeah, we are learning a lot here at Eagle FM. We are being society. We are being therapied for free, for absolutely nothing. So I had been naive for a very long time, and I have this innate need to see the greatness in everybody. And it is only right. It is only, I think, in 2021, yeah, in 2021, where I started now starting to see things for what they are. But then even in that time, I was still a little bit of a humanitarian in terms of like, no, the human beings, they're great. The human beings, they're great. The human beings, right? And then it was blow upon blow upon blow upon blow, you know? When, for example, when my dad died, it was only two people that were there for me. Like, yo, I was like, what? But I'm a great person. Why do I only have two people in my corner? You know? And this was like, oh, okay. And I tried not to like, yeah, you are trash because you weren't there for me, or you are, I tried not to, but eventually it seeped in. And it also started escalating now as I became an employer. An employer is one of the toughest roles that you will ever play in your life. One of the toughest positions you can ever be in your entire life, because it is so demanding in so many areas, especially there by your heart, right? Or now you have to choose your business or you choose the people. And usually the people are not standing even for the business, so.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat Spice, Boyki's ready, even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh, you can't get without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog.
Tassimber. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
All right. right. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch. So we are talking about bad habits that we may have. And one of the bad habits that I picked up on is the bad habit of listening to other people, but not to the people that are closest to us. And I think that, this is a theory. I think that we undermine everybody that we know personally's intelligence. So we undermine their intelligence. And also, I think that we feel that there's a sense of control, especially in relationships, right? When you're being told by your spouse, we all want that little bit of freedom, apparently. We want that little bit of freedom and that little bit of, own opinion and that little bit of just having the freedom to make your own choices and hoping that your choices are correct. But, so, when your spouse tells you something, especially in negative times, when you guys are in the down season, right? Or when you have created a down season, it is not often that you want to hear exactly. It's like Oshiruri Ashia, and then just holds your common sense and holds your logic and holds your ears when your spouse is talking. And your spouse can say that, no, I don't think that that's a good idea. And you will go and do it anyways, because what does your spouse know? They don't even know good ideas. They don't even know what, like, and you speak of them from a negative light, even though you say that you love them, even though you say that you respect their opinion. My question is, then why don't we listen? Why don't we listen to one another? If we love each other and respect each other so much, then why are we not hearing each other when we are being advised by people that we know? And then somebody can come and tell you, you can say that, oh, you know, I'm going to go fishing. I'm going to go fishing next weekend. And then your spouse can say that, like, yeah, but the weather forecast says that it's going to be high tide and the fish is going to be what, you know, advising your spouse, which I know next weekend is not a good idea. And they're like, yeah, you just don't want me to go. So I'm going to go. And then somebody else, will ask your partner right in front of you even. And say like, oh, what are you doing for the weekend? No, I'm going fishing. Like, ah, me bro, I don't think that that's a good idea because the tide is high and the fish is also what, and then the waves are also what, and it's going to be catastrophic and it's going to be terrible and it's going to be what. And then your spouse will instantly listen. Like, yeah, okay, no, then that cancels my plans. And it offends me. It offends me. It offends me so much because I said the same thing. So do you only listen to other people, but you don't listen to internal? It's like your mother. It's the same thing. It's like your mother telling you, right? That friend of yours is bad. That friend of yours that you keep hanging around with, that person is bad for you. That person is not your friend, right? And you're like, yeah, mom, you don't know nothing. Like, how do I, as your mother, not know nothing? One, I'm most probably double or three times your age. So I've had more experiences on friends than you ever have, right? And also I have seen good and I've seen bad, and also I know you, and also I can see a snake. Yeah, I can spot a snake a mile away, and you are saying that I don't know nothing. And you might not even use those words, right? You might just roll your eyes, you might just keep quiet, but you know that you're not going to listen, right? And then your mother's friend comes over and says like, ah, no, no, the way I'm seeing things, I just feel like that friend of yours, ne, is not good for you. And then you're like, yeah, but auntie, tell me more. I was like, Eche, like, is like having a girlfriend that listens to everybody except you. Like, oh. You are telling your girlfriend, Kucha, no, I think you should go and study pharmaceuticals because you are really a medicine person. And also you are not too much of a people person. You are more of assistant, and then the person is out and you don't want to be chilling with long hours. And then this person is like, yeah, I'm going to do medicine, or I'm going to be a nurse. And you're like, no, be a pharmacist. Like, ah, oh, no, I don't want that. You know? And then a stranger comes, and then the person says like, yo, so Lisa, I see that, I see that you are really into like medicine and all of that. And I think that you would make a great pharmacist. And at some point you can even open your own pharmacy and all of that. And then all of a sudden Lisa is like, yeah, I never thought of it that way. Like, Eche, what do you mean you never thought of it that way? Like, I find such great offense. Like me, I was just barking what? Me in the background, I was just barking. And then all of a sudden you can hear this person. Like, this person is talking sense and me, I talk nonsense or what? Like, I find it so offensive because, wow. It's like, I must not advise you anymore. I must take my advice to other people that will appreciate it. Because here, clearly my advice is not appreciated. Like, yo. I remember advising, one of my relatives. I remember advising one of my relatives that, listen, don't buy anything. You know, like, don't buy anything for now. For now, work your credits. Work your credits and figure out your routine, especially with finances. You know, figure out your routine with finances and then you see, right, which one is the most important thing. I'm going to do this. And then somebody else came and said, like, no, I think you shouldn't buy anything. Ha! A stranger from the streets. And I'm your relative, right? And then it's a stranger from the streets, like, oh, personally, I believe that young people, they shouldn't buy anything. Ha! And then this person is like, yeah, that's such a brilliant idea. And I'm like, is this a bad habit or is it disrespect? Because I can't tell. It's such a thin line. I can't really tell. Kucha, what is it? Is it because we don't value the opinions of people that we know? Or is it because of other issues, maybe? The number in studio is 083-288-401. That is 083-288-401. Is it because we don't value the people that we have in our lives? Or what is it? Because we hear people talking about, like, yeah, you know, to have a partner, then you guys can advise each other and you guys can do what. But what purpose is it? What purpose does it serve if you guys are not really advising each other? You guys are just fighting about the opinions that you guys are both having. Like, is it really advice then? Like, no. You know, to have friends, then you guys advise each other. But you and your friends are always fighting. A stranger comes, ne? Your friends are nodding. Brr, they are nodding and eating that up. Like, you're like, yo. Isn't that a hectic one? I think that is one of the bad habits that we as people have. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm saying that maybe I also do it, you know, like, not even maybe. I'm sure, most probably, right, that I do it. I just haven't had anybody point it out to me. So if somebody ever points it out to me, like, please point it out to me that, you're listening to others and you're not listening to internal. Internal is most now friends and people that know you and people that want the best for you. So that's internal, right? So if ever I'm in a situation where I'm just eating it up, like, I'm taking all the advice from strangers and the people that are close to me, like, please, I would like to be told. But I think that, in most close relationships, the reason that we have this bad habit is because we've got so much dirt on one another. And we've seen each other maybe make bad choices. Like, if you've seen your mom make bad choices about the very same thing. So she's advising you about friends, but then she's got this one bad friend that she still socializes with. And then she's advising you on friends. You're like, so you are a good judge of character when it comes to friends, but you when I your friend is trash. So maybe it's because of that. Maybe we picked up that bad habit because we've seen the ups and the downs of the people that are close to us. So that is the first one. And then number two is holding tension. Now, holding tension is holding things in. Holding tension is holding things in and things that stress you, you know? And, you just hold it in, and then maybe one of your outlets or release outlets is, picking at your hair or biting your nails. Those are also unconscious, habits that can determine, that can deteriorate your your physical health, right? But it's also one of those tension relief kind of bad things, bad habits that we might have. That's why I was saying yesterday that, hey, I'm not judging you, but I want you to understand why you are biting your nails. I want you to really just get evaluated. No, it's just the way I am. Like, no baby is born biting nails, guys. Because one, babies don't even have teeth. So you must have picked it up from somewhere. Something must have happened in order for you to start doing this. And soothing mechanisms, right? Soothing mechanisms. Just the same as, those that have deep soothing mechanisms, like sucking your tongue, sucking your thumb, those little things. I don't know which the other one is. Oh yeah, playing with your ear or playing with your belly button. I don't know. Like, yeah, weird things like that. And I'm saying weird because I used to be a thumb sucker. This is usually soothing mechanisms that, children pick up in tension-filled environments. So if your children pick up on these habits, there's usually a lot of tension around them, or also maybe there was tension during pregnancy and you passed on a few things to the baby, and now your baby is just an anxious child. When anxious baby, and they have these soothing mechanisms to make themselves, you know, feel a little safer, feel a little bit better, because they are very emotional. And it's sad. When was it? I think when I was pregnant with my daughter, I was under a lot of stress, and the psychologist was like, no, you have to stress less. I'm like, I don't think it's professional for you to say stress less. But okay. She said, stress less, because now you're going to give birth to a baby that is very anxious, and the poor thing doesn't even know where it stems from, because nothing happened to them in their own lives, but it happened to them through you. And that made me very sad. So every time I look at baby girl, I'm like, oh, do you have anxiety? How are we going to take it to the psychologist when, you know, you don't really talk, you know, you're two. And I know, like, maybe I have anxious children. So I'm like, oh, I hope they get better. I hope they get better. And that's why I'm trying my best. So holding intention is most probably, it is also a bad habit that we can say that, in order for you to be a little bit more relaxed and also a little bit more better regarding your mental health, you have to have ways of releasing stress. So go for a walk, go for a run, pick a sport, you know, pick an aggressive sport, for example, that would force you to push. Like boxing or kickboxing or Muay Thai or something like that. It's just so that you can release this stress and this tension that is within you, and you can feel better. It will help you. That's the idea behind it. So we're talking about bad habits that we might have and might not have. And the first one was, do we not listen because it's you?
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low, because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Alrighty. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. How are you guys doing? It's Pulling Heartstrings, and the strings that we are pulling today is a continuation of bad habits that we might not have, that we might have that we don't know of. Now, the reason that I'm talking about bad habits is because they are so many. If we can cover bad habits for 3 days, right, then that means that they are so many, we will never ever finish them because chewing with your mouth open is bad. It's a bad habit because I'm sure somebody told you, don't chew with your mouth open. And then one day when nobody was there, you chewed with your mouth open and then you kept going. And now you're an adult, right? That can't go to a gala dinner because you eat like that. And you're wondering why your partner doesn't want to take you to work functions because you chew with your mouth open. Stop. Okay. And number three is poor sleep habits. Yeah. All of you. Yeah, you guys all of you, you run under this one. Poor sleep habits. Going to bed at irregular times and scrolling on your phone at night can disrupt your body's natural sleep cycle. So it is advised that you have a bedtime routine and go to bed when it's time to go to bed. The idea is to get 8 hours in, but in a time where our lives are extremely busy, right? And we've got so much worry and so much going on. I would say like, oh, 8 hours is a lot, guys. Mm-mm. 8 hours is a lot because you get home. For example, like with me, my house is extremely noisy. Like, yo, my house is extremely noisy. It has 3 kids and the smallest one is practicing her vocal cord. So she's at that point where it is just, she wants to expand her voice. So she cries and she nags and she shouts and she screams and she sings and she's doing every voice activity there possibly is, in this universe. And that plus the TV making noise, plus the other kids also making noise, plus the running, right? I can honestly say that, yay! It is like a mini nightmare there. Most of the time we're just blinking, but you know, you can't ship them off because they are yours. So it's not babysitting if they are yours. It's parenting. So that's the portion, but it does become overwhelming. And that's why sometimes we ship them off, but it does become overwhelming. And when you get home at 12 o'clock midnight, the one thing that you get at 12 o'clock midnight is absolute silence. When I say absolute silence, I mean it. I mean the streets are quiet, the TV is off, the noisemakers are sleeping, and you can basically hear a pin drop. And you're like, wow. So what am I going to do in this time? That is also one of the times that you can be most productive. You can read through whatever you were writing. You can read through notes. You can really get something done if you are utilizing that time. And the problem with that is by 3 a.m., you have to get into bed and then you have to sleep. So if you're sleeping at 4 a.m., right? Because you're also going to spend an hour doing absolutely nothing on the phone, just scrolling, 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 you know, meaningless. Yeah. But stimulating, titillating to some degree. And you sleep at 4 o'clock. How are you going to pull in 8 hours? If 4 to 8 is already 4 and then you're supposed to wake up at 11 or what? Ah, no. No, you can't wake up at 11. And that's where we deprive ourselves of sleep. So occasionally it is said that you must sleep and you must rest your body. And when you rest your body, it would feel better. And one of the things that I have been experiencing or I had experience with was going to bed tired and waking up tired. You're not supposed to wake up tired. You're supposed to wake up rejuvenated because you're supposed to be rejuvenating when you are sleeping. So if you're waking up tired, then there's something wrong. And then sometimes you have insomnia where you really just can't sleep. You can't sleep, 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 you can't sleep. You go and sleep and you sleep for an hour like Tatebwana. sleep for an hour and then you wake up. So you basically sleep for 1 hour in 24 hours. And then for the other 23 hours, you are awake. And that's not good, right? But that's just a bad habit that we picked up along the way, because we used to have regular sleep patterns. We used to be going to bed like ordinary people. We used to, and then things just changed, and it's not good. Okay. And number two, lack of movement. Now you're thinking, lack of movement. How is lack of movement a bad habit? Well, we started sitting. We started sitting for a while, and then we just got accustomed to it. Then we just realized that it's nice here. But the problem is that our bodies need movement. Now, if we sit for a long time and we never get up or nothing, then that's most habits that we are intending. So every time you go somewhere, you sit down. Every time you are at home, you are sitting down. And then when you go in the bed, you sit down and then you lay down and then it's down, 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 down. And then you don't have an activity. And then in the car, you are sitting. Everything, everywhere, at the office, you're sitting, 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 sitting. And then there's never a day that there is, movement, real movement, not unless you're walking from your door to the elevator and then from the car to the office and then from there to a short distances, right? And those don't really clock in walking steps. So it becomes a bad habit. Sitting for long periods, especially with poor posture, can lead to back pains and negative effects on blood, on body's circulation, right? And even your blood circulation, guys. And this is why we're calling it a bad habit, because you don't see it coming. You don't see it coming. You just pick it up and then you're like, oh, but this is nice. This is nice. This is nice. And then it just becomes who you are. So start moving a little bit. Sometimes take the stairs. Sometimes, you know, sometimes stand, sometimes walk, sometimes just a little bit. And I know that I'm preaching to the choir, because I'm also not big on movement. I'm not big on movement. And I always have an excuse of I'm busy. I'm doing this. I'm doing this. But truth is, I should actually just make time. I should make time for it, because also when there is movement, I feel so much better. Like I feel better within my body. And number four is poor nutrition. Eating excessively unhealthy snacks or fast food can also be a bad habit that you picked up. So you never want to cook, and then you just get fast food, fast food, fast food, fast food, fast food. Then you go into a shop, you don't do grocery shopping, you just get snacks. And later on, you just live off of snacks. And then you don't drink enough water. How many of you guys drink at least, and I'm saying bare minimum, at least 2 cups of water a day? Not many, but we all drink cool drink. We drink 2 liters of Coke. We drink 2 liters of what? We all drink cool drink, but many of us don't drink water. And now your pee is just wicked whiff. It's just yellow. It's moving to orange, maybe, you know, and you're like, I don't know why this is happening. Well, it's because you don't drink water, and that's bad. And these habits are habits that you might not notice, like not drinking water. How many of you guys actually become like concerned when you haven't drank water, except the healthy people? Because I know I don't get concerned. I don't get concerned. I'm like, oh, I drink water. But I know people that never drink water. I know people that don't find the importance of having a water bottle in the fridge, because they never drink water. Like, this bottle is just taking up space. It's empty even. Let's just throw it away. I'm like, yo, hectic. All right. So now, ladies and gentlemen, we are moving to mental and emotional habits. Negative self-talk. Negative self-talk is also a bad habit that we pick up along the way. Maybe something happened to us one day and we are like, oh, I'm so stupid. right? I'm so stupid. I'm so stupid. And the next day something else happens and then we're like, I told myself, I knew I'm stupid. I'm stupid. And then another day happens again. I'm stupid. I'm stupid. Now do something long enough. It's not only that you believe it. It is that it will become a routine. It will become something that you do. You winner that you do this. And before you know it, right? That's all you do. You chip away at your self-confidence. You chip away at your self-esteem. You chip away at you. And you become your biggest bully. You become your biggest nightmare. And it's just chip, 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 chip. You just keep chipping away. Just keep chipping away. And you now have to go and get your mind adjusted. But why? Because you started with that one and you didn't cut it at the beginning. So you might do something that makes you feel stupid. You might do something that makes you feel bad, right? But what you say to yourself is important. You are just as important as other people, ne? The way you value other people, the way you see other people, the way you receive other people is the same way you must value yourself and receive yourself also. Not only, but also. Because you guys take this concept very far and then you guys just start valuing yourselves only and stop valuing other people. And now you don't have a sense of other people. You just care about yourself and then you just become this selfish person and then you go and say, but matriarch said, I didn't say care about yourself only. I said care about yourself also. Also is inclusive of other people. And yes, of course, we spoke about overthinking, being also a mental and emotional habit that is bad, right? Because with overthinking, there is no day that you overthought something into greatness. There's no day that you ever overthought something into wonderful. You always overthink it into the worst way, into the most negative, into darkness. The problem was not even going to go to the dark, right? And you take it there with your mind and thinking about a problem on top of a problem on top of a problem on top of a problem. And that's what overthinking is. So stop overthinking. Accept or take things the way they are at face value. And getting caught in a cycle of overthinking can lead to anxiety and indecisiveness. And I think that this indecisive nature that many of us have is brought by overthinking. And it's not a nice thing. I see many of us want to jump onto the trend of every negative thing out there. We want to have it. It's like we are so uninteresting. Right? We're so uninteresting that we want to take up bad things to make ourselves interesting. Like you openly say things like, I'm an overthinker. I'm an empath. You know, with empaths, I discredit the empaths a lot because empaths for me are not great people. Empaths for me are sad people that gravitate towards bad things because you never see the empath gravitating to the happy guy that's in the room. You see the empath gravitating to the unhappy person. So if you are really taking up other people's emotions as they are, then why doesn't the happiness register? Why? In a room full of people, you go to the sad one. Why? Because I would believe that 700 happy people and one sad person stomps the sadness. So the energy of happiness, right, would be more than the sadness. So why gravitate towards sadness? It's maybe because we like it. And there are also types of empaths, like dark empaths, right? Dark empaths are something close to narcissists, but that's a story for another day. So this indecisive nature that we have, like, I don't know, what do you think I should do? I don't know. Why? It's because you have overthought it, and you have only overthought it in all the negative light, in all the negative ways. And now that it's there, you don't know because you can't make up your mind because in every scenario in your head, it ends badly. So now you are trying to figure out which bad can you live with. Which negative can you live with? Because you have thought about it six ways to Sunday, right? In six avenues, and all avenues are bad. And now you can't make up, your mind, because all six of the ways that you have thought about it are bad. Mm. And then number five is living in the past. Many of us are living in the past, and I know why we live in the past. We live in the past because of trauma. We live in the past because of past fears. We live in the past because somewhere along the way, somebody showed us that we can't trust them. Somebody showed us that we can't believe them. Somebody showed us that human beings hurt other human beings, right? And now you live in the past because you don't know how to move forward. And also the person that has assisted you in traumatizing you is incapable of living through the part that you are dwelling in the past. You're dwelling in the past. This is now for friendships and for all types of relationships, right? You're dwelling in the past because also the person that has caused the harm is not able to understand that you have to lick your wounds. You have to heal from it with their assistance. You have to learn how to trust again. And that is why you find that, people that are in relationships where one party has cheated, right? They are never the same afterwards. And they do heal. Some do heal. Some do heal, but, the healing process is excruciating, especially for the party that has done something bad, because they have to live with the monster that they have created. They have to live with this. And that is why some people break up with people after they've cheated on them, because they know that everything will be around it. Those are the ones that crack the code now. Which, once she catches me cheating, nah, it's never going to be the same day in the relationship, because the relationship was nice because she thought she trusted me, or she trusted me. And now that trust has been broken, it's not going to be nice anymore. So it's better for me to leave the relationship and then just allow her to be and think whatever she wants to. But some of us don't want to leave relationships, right? We want to make it work, but making it work takes real time. It takes real time, and it's a real healing process, and it's excruciating for both parties, because you get these outbursts of anger, you get these outbursts of betrayal, right? There's nothing worse than thinking that you can trust somebody, and then they tell you that, and then they turn around and show you that you can't trust them. It's so painful. It's so painful to think that the person that's supposed to have your back doesn't actually have your back. The person has other people's backs also. Eh? Like this person is for the streets like that. This person is somebody else's knight in shining armor. You are also part of the parcel of people that think that they are the knight in shining armor. And that is why for me that is the ultimate deal breaker. Sharing, no. Infidelity, no, guys. For me, it's a deal breaker, because I'm a long healer. I might take a lifetime to heal from it. And also it causes so many insecurities within you. And it also, it messes with you. It messes with you on levels, spiritual levels, friend. It messes on you on all the different planes of life, because you have to now readjust, and you have to learn to trust a person that's poisonous. You are out there saying, put the volume higher, yeah? Looking at your cheating spouse. Put the volume higher so that we can hear this part about cheating. Yeah. It's such a bad thing. It's such a bad thing, because, So now you're going to be going to work. Like, you know when guys say that women are crazy? I always ask, what did you do to encourage this crazy behavior? Because I'm sure you didn't find this girl crazy, and then you decided that I want a crazy girlfriend. No, you didn't find this person crazy and decided that, oh, I want a crazy girlfriend. No, you found her absolutely normal and at peace and everything. And then you went ahead and made her crazy. And then you call her names now. Then now that she's crazy, you call her names now. You're like, yeah, she's crazy. That girl's crazy, brah. That girl's crazy. But you created this. I don't know why we don't want to live with our own, like, live by our consequences, like, live by our actions bring reactions. There are consequences to our consequences to our actions. Right? That's why I don't think that I ever, like, I will ever, like, play like that. I would rather leave you. If I want to go and experience other people, I would rather leave you. I'd rather leave you and then, right, heal from you and then go and experience other people. But experiencing other people while I'm with you, that's a bad habit. That's a bad habit because once you start, right, you go and look for comfort in other people's arms all the time and relationships, right? They have bad seasons. Not a bad day, my friend. I'm talking bad seasons, like gnarly seasons, where it's slam dunk seasons, where it's WWE kind of seasons, where it's life or death situations. And those are now like the relationships where you guys are all fighting for the relationships, but you're also fighting within the relationship, right? Now, if you guys have these kind of tough and gnarly seasons, nasty seasons, right? And every single time something happens within the season, you go and look for comfort outside. This comfort that you're going to look for outside. Don't you think you're going to be looking for comfort, right? For the whole entire relationship. You will always go and look for comfort. You always go and look for comfort. You always go and look for entertainment. You always go and use other people's kids for your amusement. You will always go and mess up somebody else's life for your own amusement because you are not getting along with your spouse, right? And now you are, hey, so, hi, Shemaine, how you doing? You guys are there in people's DMs and stuff like that. Hi, Shemaine, how you doing? Just because you guys had a fight with your wives or girlfriends, the permanent ones. And this is what you create. So next week when we fight, your mom is now also going to be like, yo, what's up, Shemaine? And then Shemaine is most now going to complain that, yeah, you ghost me the whole week. No, it's not like that. It's not like that. It's really not like that. And no, don't be like that. I'm sorry. Then you start a conversation again. And then after that, a week passes by and you ghost her again. And then you start another conversation with Linda. And then you start it like this. And then it just becomes a bad habit. It becomes a bad habit where you start entertaining, you know, other people. And I think ever since my ancestors and I have been chilling, right? I've learned to see so much. I've learned to also preserve myself so much because the world is so dirty. There are people that are born with things, bro. Born with it. You're just born bad luck. Just imagine that. Like, you just come into the world a fresh baby, a clear canvas, but you have this tinge of bad luck because of your ancestors, because of your clan, because of your heritage, because of your lineage, right? Kucha, there was this one auntie within your lineage that stepped somewhere where she was not supposed to step, or she went and did something, or she slept with someone, or somebody cursed her, and this is now you guys' portion. That's why they are generational curse breakers, right? Where you are just born different in your family. And you are the one that's supposed to take away the spirit of poverty, take away the spirit of lust, take away the spirit of adultery. You're the one that's supposed to break all of this, and you're supposed to be the one that creates a lineage that is clean, you know? And, but yet you still have it. And up until you figure out that this is what's wrong with me, you'll still be doing it. So now imagine you and your clean self, right? You and your clean self, you leave your beloved husband at home, and you are going to now start fraternizing. and start fraternizing with Tom. And Kanti Tom has this spirit of poverty, for example. He's born with a spirit of poverty. His whole lineage is like poor. And you've been lucky. But what those kinds of things take up, right? What those kind of burdens and curses take up is that they suck out all the good that's within you. So ever since you started sleeping with Tom, you are losing money. You are losing. Ever since you started sleeping or talking or fraternizing with Harriet Oshiri, your whole life just starts crumbling. And you have no idea what's happening. You're like, I don't know. But apparently you're happy, right? Because there by Tom, it's happiness. And at least it's not your whack-ass husband. Oops. It's not your work husband that is always just reading newspapers and watching TV and just home, you know, like he doesn't go anywhere. He just goes and does his things and then he comes back home. At least it's not him, right? And so you are excited and everything, but it's taking from you. Yesterday I was listening to a documentary that was talking about, not a documentary, but you know, some teachings, right? From a Sangoma. And she was talking about, spiritual husbands and spiritual wives. And the question of what happens to you that has a partner that has spiritual husbands and spiritual wives. And I was like, yeah, but what does happen to you? But I knew it. Yeah. Because if this thing is having coitus with your partner, to take out every single bit of joy, every single bit of good luck, every single bit of good things from them. You that enters the same domain, or you that allows that to enter your domain, are you saying that it's not going to leave seeds of bad luck and badness? Are you saying that? No. Then those must be bad habits. Those are bad habits that we pick, and we pick these bad habits up from also not knowing how to deal with our little monsters that we create. I'm all for the monster, guys. Ah, me. I'm all for the monster because nobody is born insecure, man. You made me like this. Yeah? Nobody is born fragile and scared and all of that. It's the world that has made us like this. Nobody is born anxious. Not unless, you know, anxiety through pregnancy and all of that. But that one is not as a telltale as the one that happens to you during this experience called life. So now, if you are the one that causes mistrust, you are the one that makes, like, you guys are the ones that throw everything into the rubbish bin, then why don't you want to deal with the smell of the trash? Yeah, because the smell of the trash doesn't smell nice, ne? So I hear budgets. Yeah, my baby mama crazy, brah. Yeah, my baby mama crazy. My baby mama keeping me from the baby. My baby mama what? But you never hear, that I drink too much. And every time I drink, I beat them up. And that's why my baby mama is keeping me from the baby. Like, you know that every girlfriend after you thinks that you are a monster. Every, I don't know now about boyfriends, ne? But every girlfriend after you in somebody thinks that you are a complete monster, thinks that you are the bad guy because of what they are told about you. You know, there was always this, there's this little saying that, I heard, right? That out there, there's a woman, for the woman now. Out there, there's a woman that knows everything about you and you don't even know her just because she's sleeping with your ex. She knows everything about you. She knows where you stay. She knows everything. She knows where you stay. She knows who your parents are. She knows your parents' secrets. She knows your ID number. She knows, what you did and what you did not do and what the other party, assumes that you did. This person knows everything about you, right? Whether it was solicited or unsolicited. Knows everything about you and you have no idea who they are. And also, this person thinks that you are the worst person in the world. But you were the one that was being abused. You were the one that was being beaten. You were the one that was being dragged through the mud. You're the one that was being cheated on. But apparently you, Wena, you are the bad guy because you left. Ah, she's crazy, bruh. Like, yeah, oh, that girl is crazy. Like, one day, bruh, she just, you know, she just went skydiving, bruh. That girl is crazy. Used all the money for skydiving. You're like, huh? Like, but skydiving is a fun activity. No, bruh, she was not supposed to. Huh? Oh, okay, cool. Then you're like, I'm not going to skydive because my boyfriend thinks that that's crazy. And those are bad habits. Those are bad habits where we don't want to deal with the little demons we create. If you enable your child, then your child is going to grow up dependent. Your child is going to grow up not taking no for an answer. Your child is going to grow up being incapable of surviving on their own. And that is why you find many of them, right? Many of them that have been enabled by parents. They don't make it that long after the parents die. They first of all, and usually it's the ones that have money. It's the ones that have money to leave for their kids. They are the ones that enable their kids. So when the parent dies, right, this child that doesn't know how to think for themselves and is also just low-key like a bad person because there's entitlement, this child absolutely loses it when the parent dies. Absolutely loses it because they don't know how to fend for themselves. They depend so much on the parent that passed away. And oh my God, what am I going to do with myself? What am I going to do with my life? They get inheritance. They blow it. Yeah. Just like the South Africans. They blow it. They blow the entire inheritance in a day. Montanya week. Sharp. And then what happens? Then they lose their minds a little bit. And when they lose their minds, and that's it. They lose their minds a little bit. And that's their reality. And then eventually one day, they start talking, yeah, if my dad was alive, if my mother was alive, brah, if my grandmother was alive, brah. And this is a person that had like 1 million, 2 million, 3 million, 10 million in inheritance. And now, if my dad was alive, I wouldn't be suffering like this. I'm like, yeah, ne? Yeah. It's usually those ones. Ah, no. They don't really go far, those ones. And that's why we're saying don't enable. Don't enable bad behavior. Try and reprimand to the best of your ability. Keep reprimanding to the best of your ability. But also if you don't see your little cat Sunshine as doing anything wrong, then let Oshiremashoe and hope that Oshiremashoe dies before you. Because you leaving that child on this earth is a burden to mankind. So, I'm just saying. And that is living in the past. Living in the past is a bad habit. It is a bad habit because it does eat away at you. The one that's living in the past. It does eat away at you because that means you don't really forget and you don't really let it go. And it takes a lot to let it go. I know that letting it go and forgetting about the past, right? It comes from a space where the person that you're dealing with, right, is one, truly remorseful. And three is doing everything in their power to reassure you that the past events will not repeat themselves. Now, if you are a person that gets tired of reassuring other people and you never remember that you hurt other people, then there will be no way that the people that you are with, right, don't live in the past because you are a constant reminder because everything that you do and every step that you are taking, right, is a constant reminder. You can't say that you stopped gambling, right? So say now you gambled your house away, you gambled your house and the cars away, and you had to move your whole entire family to Okahau, like, because you gambled everything away, because you were playing blackjack and then you put your house up. People get it right. You blame, and then you take your whole entire family to Okahau to go and live in the village. Kids have to stop going to school because who's gonna stay here? Or your children have to go and live with aunts and uncles because they still have to go to school, and you just mess up your whole entire family. right? Now you move your whole entire family to Okahau. You guys are chilling in Okahau. You guys live there in Okahau at the village house. Now, because you don't have a city house anymore, you don't have cars, you don't have money, you don't have nothing. And you gambled everything away. And you are now trying out business. You're trying out business. You're trying to get a grip on life, right? And your partner sees you. Your partner sees you working at it. Your partner sees that you are doing this. But it's also still frustrating because you done gambled our whole entire life away, right? And then you start all of a sudden going to this other bar. Munoma jackpot. And you are saying that you are not opening my wounds. How are you not opening my wounds? If gambling is the same thing that got us in this mess in the first place. Yeah, but am I not supposed to be going out to go and enjoy my life? Eh? Just because I made a mistake. You didn't make a mistake. You made a decision that messed with everybody's lives. And you have to pay for that. Paying for that is showing remorse and change. That is the only way you can heal anybody's heart. Is by showing remorse and changing. Like literally, you have to change your steps. You have to change the way you think. You have to change everything about you in order for this person to now be comfortable with you and also allow you, without reasonable doubt, to be a living person that is out there and enjoying their lives and trusting that you're not messing up their lives yet again. And now, you as the partner that's there, you're wondering, yeah, but why are you going to that bar? Say now that bar is the only bar, right? Puno shimwenyongane, you know, there's a TV there, punangama jackpot, the opuno snuka, you know, puno shimwenyongane, pokandingo shoho. Guys in the village most, pokandingo shohon. Maro muno ma jackpot, ma jackpot, geriko shikororo, gerika 10. So now, you as the partner that's staying at home now, because you are licking your wounds, my dear, you are explaining to everybody why you are not in Windhoek anymore, or you are trying to, you know, cover up why you guys are not in Windhoek. No, I just want fresh air. You are lying. I just want to be, to start my village life. You are lying. Your husband done messed up everything. And now you can't even tell them kucha shashonjokana is to sigirira each other most. So you can't really say that Tate gambled everything away. We are barely hanging on by a thread, you know? And this Tate starts going to the bar that has gambling machines. Do you think that this guy's wife, right, is not going to come and check at which ndingosho he is? Do you think that this guy's wife is not going to come and embarrass him in public? Because of all the anger that she... You leave your whole entire house here in Klein Windhoek. You leave it, my dear. Because the person gambled with a mafia person. Is that even the type of person that will feel sorry for you and remorseful? And at least ask you like, okay, fine. You know what? This house has higher value. Let's just swap houses or something. It's a person which I want my money or else your whole family dies. Is that kind of deep? So you mean to say that this wife is absolutely crazy for coming to check if her husband is at the jackpot machine? No, she's not crazy. You mean to say if it was the husband now, the husband would be crazy for saying that mekumbita mwenziwa? Because every time she goes to Ndingosho, apparently she's going with $3, but you never see her drinking nothing. Not even a halasaro tombo because she's yotada no machine. How? Is he really crazy for being insecure about Omashina? Because what she did was big. And now all of us are saying, yeah, you must stop living in the past. I know, how do I not live in the past when this past, ruined my whole entire life? It hurt me deeply. Your whole house. Whole entire house. Now you have fountain things that you are putting there in your village house in Okao, and you are even wondering, which are people fountain akanje? Because maybe even those nice fountains. You understand where you guys really had the dinero, the guala, the gash, you know, and now you are out here, like, in the village. One thing. Karenine, those types of couples that don't actually make their Avambulen houses comfortable because they don't actually plan on retiring there and they just have it because, you know, what if somebody has to get married or whatever, and you didn't do anything there in the village house? Ah, jeez, I'll see. There's no aircon. Ah, jeez, I'm full. I'll see. There's no aircon. You didn't make a nguru with nice tiles, and there's just no civilization there. So you are there with Habibi, my dear, Mondo Dainio Khosi, because the whole time you guys were just so comfortable in your lavish house, and this person just then threw away everything. And when they saw that it was getting bad, Anwar is going to kill himself. Like you're like, now you're struggling with mental health issues, and then you're also struggling with being very angry, which is also mental health issues for you again, and you still have to keep it up because you also don't want the kids to really see the struggle like that. So all I'm saying is that maybe it's a bad habit for us to not understand other people's pain. Maybe we as people that hurt others should actually get hurt the way we hurt others. Because I know that you only feel death if you have experienced death in your house. You only know what it's like to lose a parent once you've lost a parent. You only know what it's like to lose a friend once you've lost a friend, a real friend. You only know what it's like to lose a child when you have lost a child. You only know what it's like to lose an employer when you've lost an employer. But everything else is from the perspective of an outsider. Those are things that you have to experience them in order to fully know and understand what they are. So maybe, right, with a little bit of vengeance, maybe people have to experience the level of hurt that they cause other people. But here in the land of the brave, it's okay for people to cheat on you, but when you cheat on them, they come and kill you, right? It's okay for people to go and have children outside, but when you go and have children outside, they come and kill you. Land of the brave for you. It's okay for people to leave you, to dump you. Sharp, but when you do it, they're going to pull up to your house and then they're going to cut you up and put you in plastics. Land of the brave for you. So there are double standards. There are double standards here to who can hurt who and why someone can hurt another person, but the other person can't hurt them. So maybe I'm not for the vengeance. In all honesty, I'm not for the vengeance. I would rather appreciate that you just let it go. If you see that you can't, you really can't, you can't let go of the past. Right? You can't let go of the past. And this person is not making it any easier for you at all, at all. They expect things to continue. They expect full privacy still of their phones. They expect full privacy of when they go out. They expect, everything must just still be the same, right? Except you. You are not the same. But they expect things to be the same. Like, why are you going through my phone? I'm going through your phone because you cheated. I'm going through the phone because you hate me. I'm going through the phone to go and find the final answer that I need before I leave. So if you think that you can't live in a world where you can let go of the past, leave the people behind. Especially family members. If family members hurt you so deeply, and every single time you are there, you want to, you relive it, let go. Let go. Trust me, it is the best decision you can make for yourself. Kucha, I give up. Yeah, I give up on my brother. I give up. Like, I understand fully that we will never have a good relationship, and ekes sharp, as all right. I'm not fighting for a good relationship anymore. Once lost it, net swore. That's how you let it go. Let it be.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Righty, before it too. Hi, how you guys doing? So it's 15 minutes past the hour of 10 and we are riding this thing till the wheels fall off at 12 o'clock. So there's this thing of, so we are talking about bad habits, and part of the bad habits that we had mentioned was negative self-talk, right? And we have also mentioned overthinking, which are all mental kind of things, which are all thought process kind of things. Thoughts become things, thoughts become things, thoughts become things. But then how do we change this, right? How do we just go magically from negative to positive? That is all. It was all a dream. I used to read word of magazine, selling paper and heavy D up in a limousine, hanging pictures on my wall. Biggie Smalls. How do we become Biggie Smalls of the 25th century? 21st century. How do we become the biggest more? How do we work from negative to positive? And that is all. How do we then start being kinder to ourselves in such a way that we can block thoughts quickly? We can block things quickly. When you just start thinking bad about yourself, whoa, 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 whoa. Not my portion, not today's Saturn back down. How do we do that? Maybe, right? We do it with being kinder to ourselves. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, please hold on and take in and digest the next speaker that is going to tell us about 5 steps of being kinder to yourself. And ladies and gentlemen, disclaimer, all the clips and all the audios and all the things that I play here on my program are not in any way implying that Eagle FM owns any rights to it or owns them. No, I'm just teaching you guys lessons that other people taught better.
Last Friday night, I completely crashed, like complete system shutdown, and I was asleep by 6 o'clock. And I don't mean sleeping sweetly like a princess. I mean snoring like a chainsaw through barbed wire. This happened while I was waiting for my husband to get home. And just to set the stage, he's in medicine, so his days can be really dark, up to and including death. And that night, I knew he needed to talk. So he came bouncing in the door like a golden retriever, flopped onto the couch, woke me out of a stone-cold sleep, and started talking. And I let him have it. And I don't mean I snapped at him. I mean I came down like 2 tons of lead. Now, in my defense, I don't think we're responsible for anything we do in the first second after waking up. And to his credit, he agreed because he stopped. He looked at me, and he said, you know what? I'm going to go make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and then I'll come back, and we can just start over. And he did. He forgot about it as soon as it had happened. But I didn't. I research and teach empathy for a living, and that's how I treated my husband when I knew he needed to talk. I had an expectation of who I thought I should be. And when I compared myself to that expectation, I judged myself as falling short. And it caused feelings of failure and of shame and of self-judgment. And it took me a few days to shake the shame and show myself the self-empathy that I teach others to use every single day. Now, before we go any further, I want to define empathy. Because empathy has this reputation as being soft and fluffy, all puppies and rainbows. But what would you say if I told you there's actually 43 different kinds of empathy? The one that's, I feel what you're feeling, is one, and it's an important one, but it's not the only one. So today, we're going to talk about 3 kinds of empathy. We're going to talk about emotional empathy, which is the I feel what you're feeling kind. Cognitive empathy, which is, I logically understand what you're feeling, I just may not be feeling anything. And self-empathy, which is the heart of this talk. And we're going to talk about it by talking about how we do empathy for others versus how we do it for ourselves. Generally, when we feel empathy for someone else, it's because there's some kind of dark emotion. Death, despair, grief, depression, something like that. We take empathy out like a first aid kit when things are bad. Now, because we feel these dark emotions, we have a feeling of discomfort. And when that happens, we have three options. We can either lean into the feeling, we can numb and not feel anything, or we can deflect and push the feeling away. Leaning in is exactly what it sounds like. You feel the feelings. It's what Brené Brown calls being in the suck. But the interesting thing about empathy is that it's completely passive. You don't try to fix anything. You don't pass judgment. You don't try to stop anybody from doing anything. You don't do anything. You just feel the feelings. But because we have that feeling of discomfort, we're usually motivated to take some kind of action, and that action is called compassion. Empathy is what you feel. Compassion is what you do. Numbing is something we all know about. But suffice to say, it's not just the food, drug, sex, alcohol kind of numbing. It could be binge-watching Netflix or fantasy football till your eyes cross, throwing yourself into your schoolwork or into your career, throwing yourself into your partner or your kids. Numbing is what happens any time we do something else so we don't have to feel the feelings. And don't get me wrong, we all do it. The problem is when you do it all the time so you don't have to feel the feelings at all. Deflecting is when we push the feeling of discomfort away. So instead of being focused on the person who needs the empathy, we focus on making ourselves feel better. It's less about something you say or do and more about the intent. If you focus on doing something to make yourself more comfortable instead of being in feeling with the other person, that's deflection. Now, when we do empathy for ourselves, it's a little bit different. We can't deflect because we're already in the feeling. So our options are either to lean in or to numb. Leaning in can be tricky because there's so many layers. Often, there's an expectation of who we think we should be. And that expectation could have been put there by our parents or by ourselves, by the media, TV and movies, or by society, or by social media. Because we all know that everything we see on Facebook is absolutely real. We have an expectation. We compare ourselves to that expectation. Now, comparison isn't bad. It's when you look at two things and see how they're different. The problem is when comparison becomes judgment, which is when you look at two things, see how they're different, and decide one is better than the other. When you have an expectation that you can't quite reach and maybe wasn't ever your own, you feel you fall short and you end up with feelings of failure and self-judgment and shame. This dance between self-judgment and shame is destructive and vicious and can be particularly hard to beat when you don't know it's happening. Like everybody else here, I've fought the shame spiral too. I used to be a musician, and I loved it. I loved the performing. I loved the people. I loved the touring. But I also loved food, shelter, and clothing. And being a gigging musician isn't always very stable. So I faced the music, got my doctorate, and moved my cookies all the way out to the West Coast, where I became a professor of French horn. Now, as you can imagine, there aren't a lot of professors of French horns out there. So I was over the moon. But within my first term, I was assaulted by one of my colleagues. The assault was brutal, but it only lasted minutes. The shame spiral I went into lasted years. What could I have done differently? Should I have spoken up sooner? Should I have not spoken up at all? How do I go home and tell my people that I'm a failure, that I'm a washout, and I lost my dream job? I didn't think things like this happened to a professor. What did I do to provoke it? I couldn't bridge the gap between my expectation of who I thought I should be and what had happened, and I started numbing. And for me, numbing meant food and alcohol, which meant for me, it also took a very physical manifestation, and I started gaining weight, which meant now I wasn't meeting another expectation. This one put out there both by society and my mom, the one that said I should look a certain way. And the more I judged, the more I was ashamed. And the more I was ashamed, the more I numbed. And the more I numbed, the more I judged. And the spiral went round and round till I ended up at 270 pounds. But this was never about the weight on my body. It was always about the weight on my heart. Author Robert Fulghum says, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can break my heart." And this is especially true with the words we say to ourselves. I'm sure everyone here can think of a time when you couldn't quite hit an expectation, and it ended up with feelings of failure, of shame, and of not being enough. It could have been in taking a test and applying to grad school, being a parent or being a partner, getting a house or getting a job. We have an expectation that we can't quite reach and may never have been our own. And when we respond to ourselves over and over with self-judgment becomes a habit and the shame spiral begins. But empathy and judgment cannot exist in the same space. I'm going to say that again, because if you walk out of this hall tonight with only one thing from this talk, this is it. Empathy and judgment cannot exist in the same space. And that includes self-empathy. I want to share something with you. It's a way to reset the self-judgment habit that feeds the shame spiral. Self-judgment becomes a habit. But you can not only change your habits, you can change them into habits that support you into becoming the next best version of yourself. Version 2.0. It's my 5-hour reset. And it's a way to replace the habit of self-judgment with a habit of self-empathy. The first R is to recognize your habits. If you can't see it, you can't fix it. And self-judgment becomes a habit. Often the things that we do day after day become so close that we don't see them anymore. So the first step is to recognize they're happening. For me, I was taking on other people's bad behavior and judging myself because of it. I'd had no control over what had happened. But because I didn't recognize the gap between my expectation of who I should be and what happened, I was letting my self-judgment control me. The second R is to redefine your habits. I was letting my habit of taking on other people's bad behaviors define me as a failure and a washout, but I wasn't. This doesn't mean you have to love your habits, but it does mean you have to have the grace for yourself that you would probably have for someone else. This is probably the most important step because it's the one that allows us to finally break the shame spiral. The third R is to replace your habits. If there's one thing I learned as a musician, it's that you can't break habits. You have to replace them. So when the self-judgment thoughts would come up, instead of taking responsibility for what other people were doing, I would look at it and say, why am I taking that on? By asking that question repeatedly, I was eventually able to replace my habit of self-judgment with one of self-empathy. And after doing it long enough, I just did it. I didn't even notice it at all. Habits aren't handcuffs. You may not have chosen the habits that you're using right now, but
onda karhandu yako parates morwe data paife ohandimo kuyadi nondaka ne data no shoyo o tumara kava hupi o netwe kaimwe o kufutarumwe o kuinyenga rumwe o kujapandali Fio papa ndauka. Onda pumga onetwe kawayo. Hai dira dira ya fange. Omafikwa amwe. Ohandi streaming. Omafikwa amwe. Ohandi popi. Omafikwa amwe. Ohandi ningaishe. Poshika ndoshimwe. Pamwe na parateza. Oenda holora. Ame haishi pangere. Osho paumwene. Dira dira omakota fanoni data momkaro wili mwana parika okutuma ko tumaraka oku streaminga noku denga pamwe na parates konga parates Namibia always
parates. But these you can, and you can change them into the habits that will help you create a bigger, better version of who you are. You control the future you, not your habits. The fourth R is to reinforce your habits and do it as part of your habit building. Practice doesn't make perfect. Practice makes permanent. But that means not just the bad, but also the good habits. When I would allow myself to not take responsibility for what other people had done, I would stop, take a deep breath, and remind myself that either I can control my self-judgment or my self-judgment can control me. Now, I'm not going to lie. It felt pretty cheesy at first. But over time, it became a signal of victory that I might not catch my self-judgment every time, but I caught it that time. And it felt really good to be evolving into the version of myself that I knew I could be. The fifth R is to revise your habits. Don't stop with the habits that bring you into version 2.0. Rethink these as well. Do they still serve you? Are they propelling you forward or holding you back? Maybe they're doing exactly what you want them to do and you want to double down. Any of these are fine. The point is that you have to keep asking yourself, is this what I want? And will these habits help me grow into the version of myself that I want to be? You control the narrative of who you want to be. One habit at a time. What the five R's do is they allow us to replace the vicious spiral of self-judgment with a virtuous spiral of self-empathy. If others are deserving of our empathy, aren't we just as deserving? And besides, if empathy leads to compassion, then self-empathy leads to self-compassion. Empathy is not soft and weak because it takes courage. And I would argue that it takes more courage to have empathy for yourself because you know where the deepest, darkest bits of you are buried. But research tells us that we have 7 to 9 opportunities to interact through empathy every day. So close your eyes. Visualize who you've extended empathy to today. Open your eyes. Did you see yourself? Because you now have the tool of the five R's to instill self-empathy as a habit. I hope next time you will. Thank you.
You are who you've been looking for. So stop looking for more unless you're looking in a mirror, because it's about time for you to see clearly that you are who you've been looking for. And that empty feeling you got, that hole in your chest, you only got that feeling because you think you're not blessed with everything you need. You see, we live in a consumerist society, which means they need you to buy stuff. And the easiest way to sell it is to tell you you're not enough. Buy this car, you'll get girls. By this bra, you'll get guys. And we're seeing it so much that we start believing these lies. But the truth is, the makeup they're selling to make you feel prettier is the same makeup you buy to stop feeling shittier about this lie they keep telling you that you are not enough. And what about the movies we watch, all the shows on TV? The more I watch, the more I see I need you to complete me. Huh. And yes, love is the answer. Love is the key. But if you can't love yourself, how can you ever love me? And loving yourself, what does that even mean? Like massages and selfies and that sort of thing? Because the more I think about it, the more it feels weird. I've always thought self-love was something to be feared. I've been taught that arrogance is bad and vanity, it's not good. And even my bracelets are telling me to act how Jesus would. So what should I do? How should I act? I'm supposed to love myself, but how do I even do that? Well, I got a trick that I picked up from a friend that noticed that I was quick to defend her when she'd say something negative about herself. She'd say, "I'm so dumb," and I'd say, "You're so brilliant." She'd say, "I'm so weak," and I'd say, "You're so resilient." And when she said, "I feel ugly," and I said, "You look beautiful," she asked me why I was so dutifully filling up her cup constantly and yet treating my own cup so irresponsibly. Because when I looked in the mirror, my voice was quite clear. "You're ugly, you're too thin, your hairline's receding, and you got a pimple on your chin." And that was when she gave me a piece of advice that changed my life. She gave me a hug, and she said, "Treat yourself like someone you love. Treat yourself like someone you love." And now, I had been standing, but I needed to be sitting because I couldn't believe that I had been letting myself keep forgetting that I was who I'd been looking for. And deep in my core, I knew it was time to stop looking for more until I could look through all my fear and look into a mirror and see clearly that the man looking back at me is the only one who can make me happy, and I am already enough. And I'm not any more special or unique than you. That's why I'm here to speak to you. You are already enough. And when you start to see that, you will start to be that. Your world will get brighter, your load will get lighter, and you can see that with life, you can be a lover, not a fighter. And that life, you deserve it. Because you are worth it. And there's no point in letting yourself keep forgetting, because no matter what you say or do, you are perfect. And so today I hope I leave you with a direction correction away from the flaws you see in your reflection. They aren't flaws to me. They are simply protection against all the doubts you have of your perfection. So start today. Take a good long look in the mirror and say, "I am who I've been looking for." Thank you. That poem is one of the most viral in history. It has been viewed over 250 million times. When it was first posted in 2018, it spread like wildfire, and overnight I saw an explosion in my social media following. I got invitations to speak all around the world, and I dropped into a deep suicidal depression. I was in Bali when it happened. Because that's where you go when you're a hippie and you're healing from a breakup. Tropical weather, great food, beautiful sunsets. And one morning I turn on my phone and I immediately notice that something's different. I have thousands upon thousands of new followers. My poem hadn't gone viral. It had gone mega viral. It got 40 million views in the first 48 hours. In fact, it would continue to get more than a million views a day for the next several months. But with that came the messages. Hundreds of DMs that flooded my inbox, most of them being messages of appreciation. They said, "I love the poem. Thank you. I sent this to my mom, my brother, my girlfriend. Thank you. This poem changed my life. Thank you." But for every 9 of those, there was one that was very different. One that would say something like, "I don't know how to love myself. Can you help me? My husband hits me and I'm too scared to leave. Can you help me? I'm thinking of killing myself tomorrow. Can you help me?" And I couldn't. I didn't have an answer. I had a poem that was getting millions of views a day, but I didn't know how to respond to people who needed something more than a poem. And I felt like I was letting them down. I felt like a fraud. I felt so much shame and guilt that my body began to break down until eventually I found myself one day locked away in a dark hotel room, feverish, shivering, covered in sweat, unable to open the curtains because any amount of light was excruciatingly painful to my eyes and my head. And what I didn't know at the time was that moment was the beginning of a long and painful journey. A multi-year quest deep into depression so that I could find the answer that I didn't have. How do we learn to love ourselves? What does that actually look like? Truthfully, I didn't know where to start. And I did believe that self-love was the answer. I hadn't faked the poem. I just didn't know what it looked like in action. Treat yourself like someone you love, but how? For me, that looked like doing anything and everything that I thought would qualify as self-love. If I didn't know what would work, I would just do it all. Meditation, journaling, writing poetry, playing music, singing, dancing, shaking, cold plunges, saunas, taking baths, hiring coaches, doing all the therapies, CBT, IFS, TRE, NLP, EMDR, you just say the letters, I did it. Detoxes, juice cleanses, water fasts, psychic readings, astrology readings, tarot readings, plant medicine journeys deep in the Amazon jungle, punching pillows, primal screaming, and naked mirror work. Yes, I stood naked in front of a mirror and I said, I love you over and over because that's what you do when you're desperate and a hippie. And the thing was, at the time, I was watching a lot of content about self-love. But the thing was, so much of that content spoke about self-love like it was a switch, an on or an off. You either have it or you don't. And because I believed that, I kept doing all of these things, seeking that moment when my self-love would click on. But it never did. Every day I kept spending hours showing up for myself, expecting a big shift that never came. Instead, I saw a little one, and then another, and then another. And I started to realize that the reason why I had felt so lost was because I didn't understand the essence of self-love. It's not a switch. It's a result. It is the result of how we show up for ourselves each and every day. Self-love is the byproduct of your relationship with yourself. And it is a relationship that needs all the same things as any other, but because it's inner, we often don't know where to start. So I started to use a framework developed by Dr. Gary Chapman called the 5 love languages. In it, they give you 5 categories that you can focus on if you want to deepen the connection you feel in a relationship. Acts of service, quality time, physical touch, gifts, and words of affirmation. Now, these are normally used in context of your relationship to others, but they can be used with ourselves. Let's take quality time as an example. How much connection is actually happening when 2 people are sitting together, but they're both separately on their phones? And yet, how often do we do that exact same thing by ourselves? We're just ignoring that inner voice in favor of mindlessly scrolling because we've confused the idea of being alone with spending quality time with ourselves. And how about words of affirmation? How would you feel if someone was constantly telling you that you were dumb, that you were not good enough, that you were never going to succeed? And yet, how often do we say those exact words to ourselves, sometimes on a daily basis? The good news is that we can change that through a combination of our attention and our intention. With the 5 love languages used as a direction, we can point our attention there. And when we do that, we will start to catch those little moments when we're not so loving to ourselves. And when you combine that new awareness with the intention to love yourself more deeply, you will start to unlock new choices that you previously couldn't see. Ways that you can actually strengthen that relationship to yourself and love yourself more deeply. And when you start to make those new choices, you will unlock the next clues that the universe is leaving you on how to achieve your intention. Yes, even if we don't like it, the universe is always giving us our next step. Sometimes that next step can be very, very scary, like leaving a toxic relationship, quitting our job, or starting therapy. But often, it's a really small next step, but equally important, like writing a poem, or finally watching that TED talk on self-love your friend sent you. For me, it was all of the above. And a mirror. So for all the people that wrote me asking for an answer so many years ago, I'm really sorry that I didn't have it back then. But I want to say thank you for helping me find it so that I could give it to all the people who need it today. And if you are one of those people, I want you to know that it is possible. It is 100% possible for you to get out of the darkness. And even if it takes years, it is so worth it. I know because I did it. Day by day, the voices in my head got a little less mean. I still get sad sometimes, but I show up completely differently for myself when I do, because I've started to relate completely differently to my own emotions. I relate differently to other people, and I relate differently to life itself. I learned how to love myself. And just like the poem said would happen, my world got brighter and my load got lighter. And that is something worth writing poetry about. And so I'd like to close today with one more poem. It's a poem that I call Heaven. Can I have everyone take a nice deep inhale and exhale? The most impactful thing you can do for the world is learn how to love life. All of life. Show people that being happy doesn't mean turning a blind eye to the pain and the sadness and the suffering that happens here. Show them that choosing love doesn't mean ignoring fear. It just means being willing to feel. And those brave souls will always heal as long as they maintain the courage to feel. Because the fear of feeling's really at the root of every fear, which creates a fear of living because feeling's why we're here. So you can fight the fact that feelings past have felt so freaking hard, but it's the very fact you have felt all that that feels like the part we should celebrate. Investigate. Learn to navigate with ease. Your emotions are the gift God gives you every time you breathe. Energy in motion with the strength to bring a king down to his knees, and yet contained within the emotion is the key to set you free. Yes, contained within emotion is the gift of what being human is, a chance to feel all of life from deep sorrow to deep bliss. And you might wish the two would split, but the twist is that they'll always coexist, because even the heartbreak you hate today had the way paved by a lover's kiss. So you can write your list of how life's a bitch, but don't forget the asterisk, because for all the times you went through shit, it fertilized a lot of gifts. But when you only focus on what you lack, you can't appreciate what you've got. But with gratitude for what you have, you can see that it's a lot. And that is the difference between abundance and scarcity. It's not about what you have. It's about what you see. So the next time you forget how blessed you be, take a moment and focus on the next breath you breathe. The next time you forget how blessed you be, take a moment and focus on the next breath you breathe. And notice, you're right here with me. A miracle, a great mystery. Out of hundreds of trillions of stars and hundreds of billions of galaxies, somehow, some way, you're here today with me and we all breathe on a spinning sphere of chemicals, spiraling through the universe. You were once one of 200 million sperm. You just happened to get there first. So how could you ever say you're cursed? You've been blessed since before your birth, and you might not think you have it best, but it could definitely be worse. And if you don't believe that yet, go tell the deaf what you just heard. If you don't like what you see, go tell the blind how much it hurts. On your hardest day, when you really want to walk away, go tell the paraplegic how it's unfair. Share how you want to run from all your problems while he's pushed everywhere in a chair. And I'm not saying that life is fair or that it's easy. We all go through a lot. But as you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, don't lose gratitude for the fact that you walk. Celebrate the fact that you can dance and sing. Embrace the abundance in the very act when you talk. Because when you can spot abundance in the simplest things, that's when more abundance unlocks. The simplest things. Taste and touch and breath and smell. Did you know there are people with something called anosmia, which means their sense of smell is completely lost. So while they literally can't smell the roses, do you want to complain you don't have the time to stop? Because this life is the only one that you've got. And there are people who would trade places with you without a second thought. So no matter how many tears, heartbreaks, or bad days you pay, the cemetery is full of souls that know living is worth the cost. Don't wait till it's too late to learn that lesson. Living is worth the cost. But make no mistake, being alive is not the same thing as living. Just like throwing something away is not the same thing as giving. So if you haven't yet found your love of life, I suggest you keep on digging and allow yourself to feel your way through all the hurt and all the rage. And as you feel, allow yourself to finally turn the page. That's how we heal. And it might hurt like hell, but you'll have shown us we'll be okay to feel it all and still love life. That's heaven. And you'll have helped pave the way. That's heaven. Can you feel it? Heaven is here today.
Can you feel that heaven is in here? It's in the room. Heaven is definitely in the room. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about bad habits. And part of the bad habits that we're talking about are emotional and mental health bad habits like negative self-talk and also overthinking. Now, negative self-talk and overthinking, right? All of these stem from the lack of self-love. The lack of self-love, the lack of self, actualization, the lack of checking yourself as a person that you love. Now, if we can treat ourselves like someone we love, then we would do a much better job. So with that said, what if one of the negative things that we as people, right, have is the age thing. Many of us are very iffy about the age. I think it's maybe because we are not where we wanted to be at a specific age, or we are just, we are extremely scared of aging, because aging, after you age, it's most death, and we are closer to our deaths when we are aging, and or that's what we think, right? And many of us want to trim down our age and make it a bit smaller and make it like we're not so close to the grave as other people. And what if we had a different approach to aging? What if we could just age with grace? What if we could just age with understanding? What if we could age truly and have a different approach on aging and see the benefits of aging? Because I feel like we are fine wine, right? We get better with age. Many of you right now, if you look at your lives in the 20s or in the teens or in the 30s or the 40s or the 50s, right? half of the mistakes that you made in those eras are mistakes you would never repeat right now. And this is a result of experience and time and age, right? But yet we tend to overlook those elements because we are getting wrinkles and we are slower and all these downers, or not even downers, all these things that we assume to be downers, right? They get in our heads. That negative self-talk, they get into our heads. Oh, I'm so old now. Oh, my whole head is gray now. Oh, I'm getting old. I'm getting old. Oh, old, you know? And it's because of those kinds of approaches that makes us so afraid of aging. But I would rather age. I'd rather age. I'm not embarrassed of my age whatsoever. I'm not embarrassed of anything. My experiences, my age, I'm not embarrassed of anything. And that is why there's no secret here. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, the trauma, the what, addictions, what. We'll lay it out here because these are things that have happened to me, that I have gone through. And I think that with all my experiences, right, it has made me such a phenomenal person, if I must say so myself. I think I'm one of the best people that I know. Like, in all honesty, I think that I am one of the best people I know. Short-tempered here, a little aggravated here, a little impulsive here, but definitely somebody that I would chill with. I'm definitely somebody that if I was the opposite gender, I would definitely marry myself. And my son would be lucky to have a woman like me. And my daughter would be lucky to have a man like me. If ever, you know, there was a man version of me, I would still approve of me. Right? Because I think that my experiences, they wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for age. I wouldn't have seen things the way I see things if it wasn't for age. I wouldn't be able to speak with so much confidence if it wasn't for age. I wouldn't be able to go through certain obstacles in my life if I wasn't the age that I was. So I pay homage to age. I give my gratitude to age because not everybody makes it, and I'm a strong swimmer. I made it. I'm here. I'm here, ain't I? And it's still October season, so I'm still here. And it's my birthday. I'm still here. So I think that if we approached life and we approached age with a little bit of honesty, you would realize that you are in a much better space as you age. You're in a much better space. I know that we miss the carefree years where other people took care of everything. But in these carefree years, right, there was also a lot of restraint. And now that we have the freedom to choose and be whatever and whomever we want to be, right, we tend to forget those liberties. It's like fighting for independence, and then now independence is here, and then we forget, right, how it felt like to not be independent, and now we abuse the independence that we have. We are entitled to things. Ah, we are very, we want what? Eh? But you don't remember a time where you didn't have it and nobody was going to give it to you. I think that if we can look at our age, if we can look at our experiences, if we can look at where we are right now and where we were a couple of years ago, and just also drink a glass of wine to that, drink a glass of water to that, drink a beer to that. Like, cheers to you. Cheers to you, young thug. Cheers to you. Do you remember the years of cornrows and stuff? You had that. And now you figured out that there's a thing called a brush cut and what. Or you figured out dreadlocks. Or you figured out whatever you're figuring out, right? And some lessons, you just wake up to epiphanies. You're like, aha, so this is what she meant. Oh, so this was what was going on. My mom always said that when you get your children, you will understand my parenting. And in all honesty, right now, as a parent myself, right, I understand my mother on so many levels. I understand my mother on so many levels. I used to get so upset when my brother would come, because he was living alone, when my brother would come home and then he would take food and stuff like that. And then we went, and then my parents, both my sets, right? My in-laws and my parents, they are the type of people that buy groceries. And I'm like, I get it. I get it.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. Is jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet? Kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3-maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6-maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12-maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Alrighty, so as we proceed, ladies and gentlemen, so let's approach age, right? Let's approach age with a different zazz. Let's look at it as not this closer to the grave, but more experienced and more wiser and more knowledgeable. And also, there's nobody that is not knowledgeable with age, no. Because even if you are a drunkard, even if you are reckless, even if you are whatever you are, there are things that you know now that you didn't know and that you can teach me a lesson or two. You understand what I mean? So nobody is useless. Nobody is useless. Everybody is useful.
We talk about adolescence as a messy emotional time. But what if I told you there's another adolescence that we're not prepared for? Imagine trying to pry the car keys away from your 79-year-old dad, who sometimes drives like Mario Andretti and other times like he's in bumper cars. It's as if he's taken the Thelma and Louise going off the cliff approach to aging. This is the moment that no one is prepared for when our aging loved ones need more supports and they think we are the problem. Fast forward 10, 20 years when our own bodies begin to age and we need more supports. Adult children of aging parents live in this emotional tug of war between safety and autonomy, logic and denial, love and pure hair-pulling frustration. It is happening every day, quietly, behind closed doors in our country. Well, that changes today. Introducing the adolescence of aging. This is a turbulent life stage when our fiercely independent aging parents start needing us, yet resist help at every turn. I am a daughter who knows this stage intimately. It started 9 years ago with a phone call. My mom was in crisis, the victim of financial elder abuse north of $1 million. That moment put me in the squeeze. You know, that place where I was trying to balance career, kids, and caregiving in a world that acts like it doesn't exist, but it does. And 37 million adult children in the United States are stuck in it, overwhelmed and wondering, how did I get here? We expect teenage rebellion, mood swings, and even temper tantrums, but we're surprised when our elders begin to act like mean teenagers with checkbooks and better medications. Adult children show up to help, and we're caught in this tangle of emotions, of frustration, fear, and powerlessness. In grad school, I researched dopamine, especially around reward, motivation, and stress. I got an MBA to understand how people behave in systems, families, workplaces, and communities. What I didn't expect was my academic curiosities would one day serve as a lifeline for some of life's most personal and chaotic moments. We prepare for having babies, puberty, and even retirement, but what if there's an equally disruptive transition from independence to dependence that has no name and no playbook? And let me tell you, it's stunning. Not only in the behavior, but how lonely this moment feels. This isn't just my story, it's our story. This is a natural stage of development that no one is talking about. There's real psychology behind what we have coined the adolescence of aging. Erik Erikson and his wife Joan wrote about the ninth stage of development. Dr. Mark Frankel wrote about the five stages of aging. Both map the slow, sometimes sudden shift from independence to end of life. Yet somehow this research and conversations still hasn't come to the kitchen tables. And it's not just psychology, it's neuroscience. The prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain that's responsible for weighing risks, multitasking, and even self-regulation, this is one of the last parts of the brain to fully mature in adolescence and young adulthood. Research is pointing it might be the first to decline as we age. So just like teenagers slam doors and make bad choices, our aging parents may begin to act similarly, not because they're trying to be difficult, but because their brains are changing, which is why the adolescence of aging isn't just a metaphor. It's a way to understand, prepare, and respond with compassion where words like aging and dementia fall short. We begin with the three D's that define the adolescence of aging. The first, defiance. It's the number one question that we get. What do we do about the car keys? Balancing your parents' safety with the need for independence and control, it's tricky. It's not just about transportation. It's about identity and who gets to decide. My lived example? I heard, I'll drive until I hit something. That something was a semi. For adult children, we are surprised by this meanness and negativity from our aging parents. We feel guilty asking questions. We are hurt by the defiance and confused by who our parents are becoming. The second attribute, denial. It shows up as a defense mechanism, a way to push back against the uncomfortable truth that roles are shifting. They're not ignoring the reality to be difficult. They're holding on to a version of themselves that still feels capable, independent, and in control. My lived example? That fall, I just tripped on the carpet. Or the doctor says I'm fine. He just wants to run a few more tests. Or I don't need a hearing aid. You just mumble. Adult children are like, mom and dad don't need help. Falling is normal. Or dad doesn't need a walker. He says it makes him look old. He's 87 years old. Denial leads to self-doubt. We begin to question ourselves. Am I crazy? Am I overreacting? Am I taking away their agency? The third attribute is decline, which shows up in waves of physical, cognitive, and emotional changes. Sometimes gradual, sometimes like a freight train. My lived example? A phone call from police. My mom had been found outside in the snow, barefoot. She had been there for hours. She didn't know how she got there. She didn't know what happened. It happened so fast, she said it was jarring, like she was waking up in someone else's story. For adult children, decline is all-consuming. From multiple emergency room visits, to figuring out rehab, to finding home care, it's exhausting. One minute you're Googling home care at midnight in a group text with your siblings, and the next you're explaining for the fifth time why a mandatory evacuation zone means everyone, and with good reason. Decline isn't failure. This is a natural stage of development that no one talks about and we were never taught to expect. The outcome is the fourth D, a quieter felt disempowerment, But don't let the quietness fool you. When aging parents lose control over decisions, routines, and even small things like what's for dinner, it can trigger deep emotions, shame, grief, even anger. That's why sometimes my loved ones went from zero to nuclear. It's not just about what's happening, it's about what it represents, a loss of agency and a loss of self. For adult children, in an effort to control this new chaos that comes into our world, we try to outmaneuver risk before it turns into a crisis. Here's the problem. In an effort to try to keep them safe, we can strip away what matters most, the right to choose. For aging parents, too much control disempowers. For adult children, too much freedom courts danger. This is the tension we walk. It's not defiance, denial, and decline. It's developmental. That's why Jane, my business partner, and I wrote Thriving in Chaos, Navigating the Challenges of Aging Parents, so families will have a playbook. We started People in the Squeeze, a voice in the movement to raise awareness and to change the way we experience the challenges of aging parents. Because when you're in the squeeze, it can feel like you're the only one stuck between career, kids, and caregiving. People in the Squeeze is for all of us caught in the messy middle, navigating hard conversations and second guessing every decision. It's a reminder that it's okay to laugh, cry, and even lose it many times before breakfast. When you're deep in the adolescence of aging, it can feel like everything is happening to you. You can't change your parents' diagnosis. You can't force a sibling to engage. You can't stop professionals who sometimes don't have the time or patience your loved ones deserve. Our bodies and minds can be hijacked by the stress, often called the fight, flight, or freeze response. That's activated by the amygdala, the part of the brain that's responsible for threat detection. And under stress, this can cause us to flip our lid, temporarily shifting resources away from our thinking brain towards immediate survival needs, which limits our ability to respond with care and compassion. That's why we created the PACE model as a way to center yourself in the storms of caring for your aging parents. The first step, P, pause, take a breath. A, assess, look around. What are you seeing? What are you feeling? C, choose, respond with intention. E, embrace, move forward with clarity. When you take a moment to pause, you can calm your brain, gather your senses, and most importantly, breathe. Breath is your body's reset button. It's the most powerful tool we have to reset and regulate from the stress response. Pacing yourself slows things down. It creates space. It asks questions. It considers other possibilities. And most importantly, it leads with compassion. Here's how pacing yourself showed up for me. On a trip across the country to visit my mom, after a long day of travel and time with her, I decided to step out and spend time at my niece's volleyball game, only to get a call that mom had fallen and was being taken to the emergency room by herself. Knowing her limitations, I couldn't imagine her navigating the chaos of the emergency room by herself. I rushed to the facility and took her to the emergency room. I hadn't eaten all day, my phone was dead, and my nerves were shot. When the staff said, "If we need you, we'll come and get you," as they took her back, I thought, "Oh boy, you have no idea." I took this moment to take a small break from the chaos. I stepped outside. I looked at the stars. I stretched and I took a deep breath. I even made a TikTok in the parking lot to remind myself.
Got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Self and others, the importance of pausing. I assessed and realized my mom's needs were shifting. I chose to focus on what I could control. I chose to not lose it with the facility staff over mom's fall. And I chose to not add to the evening's drama. Because yes, hard things are happening, but in the middle of all of it, one thing remains in our control: how we can respond. You can decide sometimes every day, every hour, not to let those hard things define the temperature of the room. And sometimes it begins with a single breath under the stars. Here's another learning. This journey doesn't just impact you. It shapes everyone around you. It's what remains after the diagnosis or even after the funeral. This is the imprint you leave behind. It's the relationship with your siblings, the memory your kids carry of how you showed up for hard. What did they learn by watching you? This isn't about perfection. This is about protection, protecting the ones you love and protecting the professionals who work very hard to care for our aging parents. We can't always change the circumstances, but we can choose how we show up. If you're in the squeeze now, here are some practical first steps. You don't have to have it all figured out. You just need a place to start. The adolescence of aging gives you a roadmap. Say it out loud. I'm in the squeeze. I want us to try it. On the count of three, we're going to say it together. 1, 2, 3. I'm in the squeeze. Excellent. Now find someone to tell your story, the real messy story. Begin to have conversations sooner, even if it's sticky, tricky, and sometimes icky. Begin to normalize it's okay to not have it all figured out. Practice asking for help, not because you're weak, but because you're strong enough to know you can't do it alone. Those tips are for us in the squeeze right now, but this conversation is bigger than that. Today, you have a chance to help us shift this story. You can help make this better by talking about the adolescence of aging with others. Just like we did with adolescents, we can build language, tools, and supports. We began this journey not as experts, but as overwhelmed daughters. We thought we were alone in this, and we realized we aren't, and neither are you. What if we had systems in place that supported families through this life stage? Imagine knowing what's coming, saying, I know where I am, I know what to expect, and I know my first steps. Because here's the kicker. The adolescence of aging isn't about age. It's about the shifting capacity of our aging loved ones. And if it feels real, that's because it is real. It's not just emotional, it's biological. So when mom says, I'm fine, I've always driven that way, it's not stubbornness. It's human development. And just like with adolescence, the first battleground is driving, money, and decisions. So let's call this what it is, a natural stage of development. Let's name it, normalize it, and build the safety rails we'll need, if not today, then for tomorrow. And maybe, just maybe, we can go back to being daughters and sons.
beautifully, beautifully said. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking about the bad habits. We're talking about the bad habits. So I think that, yes, we have looked at aging. We've looked at self-care. We have looked at self-kindness, self-love. We have looked at negative self-talk. We have looked at overthinking. We have looked at living in the past. And one more thing is people-pleasing. Owie. the embodiment of human behavior. People pleasing, we like to please other people, even at our own expense. Hey, we would like to make other people happy, even at our own expenses. But constantly saying yes to things you don't want to do can lead to a burnout and resentment. Now, that resentment that you are feeling, now all of a sudden you are feeling resentful towards this person, everything that they do, everything that they say, because you have said yes to so many things that you didn't want to say yes to, but you were forced and you were strong-armed into saying yes because maybe the person has a strong personality, maybe the person is so persistent, maybe the person is intimidating you, maybe the person is scaring you. I don't know what reasons we have for trying to please certain people. And the worst part is that we can say no in other spaces, but then certain people we can't say no because either they are manipulative or they are very nice or whatever reasons we have. But people pleasing is bad, especially when you are saying no, when you mean to say, when you're saying yes, when you mean to say no. Ah, that one. It's like raping your emotions. Please stop. Okay. And then last but not least on our category of conversations about bad habits that we might be aware of or unaware of is productivity and time management. Mindless scrolling. I think that we've covered this one. Mindless scrolling is that one. Yeah, where it's just like right now, the Eagle FM app is in the background. It's lingering there, and you are apparently falling asleep to my voice because, you know, I'm so much fun. You're sleeping. It's playing in the background. And where are you? You're on the internet. You are doing what? Scrolling, 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 scrolling. But keep in mind that my show is 3 hours, ne? And you are scrolling from 9 o'clock. You are scrolling, scrolling, scrolling. What do you call that? If not mindless scrolling, mindlessness. You are not even really checking. And even when you are checking, it's like, oh, okay. Do you know how I know that the screen is bad and that scrolling is real? I don't even need to listen to what you're saying in your video. I just have to look at pictures. So I can watch you cooking, right? Because sometimes we look at the content that we are taking in or they're taking in, right? And we think that it's harmless because, I mean, I just watch cooking stuff, right? So, It is bad. Like for me, I'm all about the cooking stuff. I'm like, hey, this is nice. Oh, then they beat the chicken. So in my head, I'm narrating the whole cooking myself because I don't like to hear the other person's voice because the voices irritate me. So I'm just narrating, and then you beat the chicken in the plastic, and then you take a stick of butter, I'm guessing, and then you put in garlic, and you put in rosemary, then you put the chicken there. Oh, they didn't put any seasoning, but you can season it with any seasoning. I'm a whole, like, I'm a background artist, or is it, what do you call those people that narrate? Yeah, I'm a narrator of your videos. So even when you are talking serious things there, I'm muting your voice so that I can just watch your video of you talking. And then I'm like, oh, she's probably talking about heartbreak. And then she's probably talking about how to make a bola. And she's probably talking about this. And I'm just guessing. But isn't that like mindless scrolling? Without realizing it, you can lose hours to social media and other digital content, okay? So you don't even realize it. And then procrastination, of course, putting off tasks until the last minute can lead to stress and poor performance. So you don't understand why you are failing. It's because you got the assignment 6 months ago and you're only doing it now because it's due at midnight. And now you're cramping and you are trying to fit everything in because you're on distance, and then then matriarch is just talking the truth, and every single time you always have to stop because now matriarch is preaching, and it's like, oh, what is this now? Oh. And you are stressed out of your mind, and 12 o'clock comes, the deadline comes, you submit your assignment, you get 30% for your assignment. Why? Because you had 6 months to do it, but you did it in 3 hours. What's wrong with you? Putting off tasks until the last minute. What's wrong with you? I work better under pressure. Is it? Is it really? Do you really work well under pressure, or is it just the only way you know how to do it? The only way you know how to do it. I'm one of those, what is it? Native veterans. Where I want to go and write the learners, and then, you know, I just study one day in advance, and then I think that I can get the book because I'm so phenomenal that I fail. Yeah. I don't fail too far, but like, I think that the thing that boosts me there is that I don't fail far. I fail like with one. I fail like with two. I'm like, yeah. Smart. I can read the book. Imagine if I can read it. But I never actually do it. And then this time around, I'm taking my own advice. I'm taking that whole procrastination and thinking, I'm not doing that. I'm taking a whole 2 weeks just to learn. And then I'm going to ask about the signs. And then I'm going to, you know, ask about the pedal and the accelerator and the ignition. And I'm going to ask about engine stuff. And I'm just going to do this fully and wholeheartedly. And then cutting corners. Rushing to finish tasks early can lead to lower quality work and mistakes because you're always cutting corners. You don't want to go the full route. You always want to find a shortcut through everything. You know, I know a guy. I know a guy that can help you with your assignment. Can't you? The guy is doing your whole assignment. And also, he doesn't even have that module. So he's doing your whole entire assignment because apparently he's so brilliant. And that cutting corners is the one that gives you 45 marks. And you can't even go back to him and say, give back my money because, you know, you did my assignment and I didn't get the marks that I wanted. No. You could have done it yourself. Maybe you could have gotten your 20%. And you are just cutting corners. Cutting corners, cutting corners. Cutting corners, chummy. Cutting corners is very bad. So let's talk about why. Why bad habits stick with us? Like why? Why do they stick with us?
Have you ever told yourself?
Why do they stick with us so much? Right? So we're going to have a Dr. Stacy tell us why bad habits stick. Because now I want to understand. Okay, so we understand, we know of the bad habits. Even the ones that we weren't aware of, we know that. Okay, so they are bad. And we know we are doing them, but we can't seem to stop. So maybe we should understand, why do they stick so much?
So, okay, this is the last time. And then found yourself doing that very thing again. Have you ever told yourself, okay, this is the last time. And then found yourself doing that very thing again the next day? Whether it's scrolling late at night, snacking when you're not even hungry, or checking your phone every few minutes. Bad habits have a way of pulling us back in. And it's frustrating because you know what you need to do, but somehow it just doesn't stick. I'm Dr. Tracy Marks, a psychiatrist, and I make mental health education videos to help you strengthen your mind, fortify your brain, and build resilience. Today, we're going to talk about why bad habits are so hard to break, and more importantly, how to actually overcome them. Because here's the thing. Breaking bad habits is about understanding how your brain is wired. And once you get that, you can start working with your brain instead of constantly fighting against it. Let me start by debunking a few common myths about habit change. Myth number one, I just need more willpower. It's a common belief that breaking a habit is simply about having more self-control. But here's what the science actually shows. Willpower is unreliable. Some days you have plenty of it, and other days it just disappears without any warning. Neurologically, willpower lives in your prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain responsible for planning, impulse control, and decision making. But habits, especially the ones that feel automatic or stored in the basal ganglia, your brain's autopilot system. So when you try to override a deeply ingrained habit by sheer force, you're asking your conscious brain to fight an automatic system that's faster, older, and stronger. And in a high-stress, decision-heavy day, the automatic system usually wins. That's why changing your environment is more effective than relying on motivation alone. If you want to stop checking your phone, put it in another room. If you don't want to eat so much sugar, don't keep it in the house or don't have it within easy reach. Small adjustments in your surroundings can remove friction and help your brain make better choices without needing to power through every time. Myth number two, if I know it's bad for me, I should be able to stop. This one feels logical. If you know something isn't good for you, why would you keep doing it? There's a huge disconnect between rational knowledge and automatic behavior. So even though you may logically understand that smoking, procrastinating, or binge watching until 2 a.m. is harmful, your brain isn't weighing these risks in the moment. The reality is your brain prioritizes immediate rewards over long-term benefits. When you're faced with the choice between the immediate pleasure of a bad habit and the delayed benefit of not doing it, your brain's reward system heavily favors the here and now. What's in it for me now? This is why behavior change often requires outsmarting your reward system. Myth number three, I just need to eliminate this habit completely. Sounds good in theory, right? Just stop doing the thing, cut it off at the root. But that's not how the brain works. Habits are built around well-worn neural pathways that expect a certain reward, often triggered by a specific time, place, or emotion. If you simply try to remove the behavior, your brain is still left craving the reward that it was anticipating. So substitution is a far more effective than elimination. So take this example. Let's say you have a habit of pouring a glass of wine as soon as you finish work. That ritual isn't just about the drink or the alcohol. It's about the shift from work mode to relaxation. If you try and cut out the wine without replacing the ritual, your brain still feels like it's missing something. But if you replace the wine with a non-alcoholic drink in a nice glass, change your clothes and sit in a different chair, you're giving your brain a new routine that still signals the workday is over and now I can unwind. The cue and the reward need to stay the same, but the behavior changes. And that's the key. It's not just about stopping the habit. It's about rerouting it in a way that still feels satisfying for your brain. Now let's go a little deeper, because behind every behavior is an identity. And this brings us to the identity trap. Many of us have self-concepts built around our habits. We say things like, I'm a night owl. I'm an emotional eater. I'm terrible with routines. These identity statements feel like honest descriptions of yourself, but they're more than that. They're prescriptions for future behavior. When you label yourself as someone who always procrastinates, you're unconsciously giving yourself permission to keep procrastinating. Your brain works to maintain consistency between your actions and your self-image. So what can you do instead? You reframe the identity and update your self-concept. Instead of saying, I'm a night owl, try, I've gotten used to staying up late, but I'm learning how to protect my sleep. Instead of, I have no self-control, try, I'm practicing better decision-making in the moment. It's a subtle shift, but it matters, because when you change your identity narrative, your behavior begins to align with that new story. If you want to do deeper work on your narrative identity, take a look at my workbook called Unlock Your Story Digital Workbook. It can help you identify some of the stories that you tell yourself and understand how you view the world. It's a digital download that you get immediately and not a physical book. I'll have it linked to this video. Another major factor keeping bad habits alive is cognitive distortions, those sneaky thought patterns that justify continuing the behavior that you're trying to stop. One of the most common is the just this once rationalization. Your brain is incredibly persuasive when it wants something, convincing you that one exception won't matter in the grand scheme of things. But here's what's happening on a neural level. Each time you make an exception, you're actually reinforcing the habit loop rather than breaking it. You're telling your brain that the rule isn't absolute, making it easier to make exceptions again in the future. All or nothing thinking is another distortion that sabotages habit change. When you slip up once and think, well, I've ruined my streak, so I might as well just give up completely, you're falling prey to perfectionism. Your brain likes clear categories, but real habit change is rarely a perfect linear process. Then there's false permission giving, creating believable excuses to indulge. I had a hard day, so I deserve this. Or I'll start fresh on Monday. Everyone else is doing it. These thoughts feel reasonable in the moment, but they're just your brain's way of getting what it wants. Learning to recognize these thinking patterns gives you power over them. When you catch yourself saying, just this once, pause and ask, is this thought helping me become who I want to be? This creates space between the urge and the action, allowing your prefrontal cortex to engage before your automatic habit takes over. Now let's move from theory to practice. I'm going to give you 5 science-backed strategies to help you rewire your brain and give you a better chance at long-term habit change. Number 1, environmental design. Make the habit harder to do. Add friction. Want to stop doom scrolling? Delete the app or log out so it takes longer to access. Want to cut back on snacking? Store treats in a cabinet that's harder to reach. Even small changes like these can interrupt the automatic loop. Next is implementation intentions. These are specific if-then plans for handling habit triggers. If I feel stressed, then I'll take these 3 deep breaths instead of checking my phone. If I'm tempted to procrastinate, then I'll work for just 5 minutes before deciding if I'm going to continue. Research shows that having these concrete plans give your mind structure and increase follow-through. Number 3, the replacement rule. Swap the old habit for a new behavior and decide in advance what it's going to be. So this takes some pre-planning. The replacement should satisfy the same underlying need. For example, if you stress eat for comfort, perhaps a short meditation could provide similar relief. Or if the need is self-soothing by putting something in your mouth, try sipping herbal tea while mindfully observing your environment and using all your senses. Number 4, habit stacking. Link a new behavior to an existing routine. After I make my coffee, I'll write down my priorities for the day. Or after brushing my teeth, I'll stretch for 1 minute. You're using what's already automatic to make something new easier to remember. And number 5, the 10-minute rule. When a craving hits, tell yourself, I'll wait 10 minutes. Most urges lose their intensity with time. This gives your rational brain space to catch up and regain control. Finally, let's talk about setbacks because they will happen. Relapse isn't failure, it's feedback. Your brain is in the process of rewiring. Every time you return to the new behavior after you slip, you're strengthening the right pathway. It's the return, not the mistake, that builds resilience. Instead of seeing a lapse as proof that you failed, treat it like data. What triggered it? What thought patterns were active? What can you do differently next time? Even just asking those questions puts you in a learning mindset, and that's where real change happens. Let's quickly recap. Breaking bad habits is not about moral strength. It's about the following: understanding your brain's wiring, recognizing the identity stories you tell yourself, noticing the thought distortions that justify the behavior, and using practical tools like habit substitution, implementation plans, and environmental tweaks. In the next video, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about how to build positive habits that actually stick and how to make them feel natural instead of forced. But for now, here's your action step. Think about one bad habit that you've been trying to change and identify the cognitive distortion that you most often use to justify it. Is it just this once? Or is it, I'll start Monday? Write it down and then start noticing when it comes up. And that awareness alone begins to weaken its grip. Thanks for watching today. I'll see you in the next video.
I stumbled upon a Reddit post the other day in a community called Deep Thoughts. The title caught my eye. The ego of modern society is destroying our youth. The post was raw, honest, and a little bit unsettling. It made me wonder, in a world that prioritizes self-expression and empowerment, have we lost sight of qualities like humility and accountability? We live in a time where boundaries are constantly changing and shifting. The boundaries between work and life, tradition and innovation, individuality and community. And then we have self-deprecation, egotism, and then self-love somewhere in the middle. Let's talk about self-love for a moment. It's everywhere. It's the hashtag under the Instagram photos, the message behind countless tweets, the big, bold titles of motivational YouTube videos. But what really is self-love? My journey to understanding self-love started with a diagnosis. Early last year, I was diagnosed with polycystic ovary syndrome, PCOS. Now, before I got my diagnosis, I did something that most of us here would do. I Googled my symptoms. By the way, don't Google your symptoms. You will only find cancer. So after my Google search, I narrowed it down to two possibilities. PCOS and cancer. I went to the lab, I ran a few tests, and I was handed a small white envelope that held my fate. I went to the pizza shop, sat down, ordered my pizza, and opened the envelope. It was PCOS. I knew there was no cure. I knew that 1 in 15 women had it, yet finding someone to talk to about it would be difficult. I had no family in Ghana to turn to. But I made a decision at that very moment. I refused to cry. I finished with my pizza. I went to the nearest nail salon. I got my first set of acrylic nails and I absolutely hated them. But this was not about vanity. It was more about intention. If I couldn't control what was happening on the inside, I could at least be kind to myself on the outside. The day the doctor tried to explain my results to me, I could see from his expression that he wasn't expecting me to be so calm. I just kept asking, so what's next? What drugs am I supposed to take? What am I supposed to do now? At some point, I even thought there was something wrong with me because I hadn't cried and I barely felt sad. But I just knew that my body and I had a very long way to go. I'd accepted my flaws and was looking for a way forward. That is self-love. But here's the part that I did not see coming. Self-love is very tricky. It's not just about accepting yourself. It's also about constantly negotiating with yourself. And sometimes, in trying to protect yourself, you can lose sight of balance. The weight gain was fast. Too fast. PCOS had taken complete control. It made it incredibly difficult for me to lose weight while causing excessive gain. When I looked in the mirror, the person who stared back felt very unfamiliar. I tried to block out comments about my body because I knew that deep down, I was at the brink of losing the confidence that I had spent so many years trying to build. I would look at people and I would just tell myself that I didn't care what any of them thought. And in so doing, I stopped listening to everyone. Anyone. Even those who genuinely cared. I'd mistook isolation for self-reliance and egotism for confidence. I remember I used to tell myself around that time that, no, these people cannot possibly understand what I'm going through because if they did, they would speak to me with respect. It was always me, me, me. Then someone told me something that I can never forget. It was during one of my many rounds of egotism when I thought my group members were doing absolute nonsense and I had to do everything by myself, that one of them spoke back to me in a way I had been speaking to them and I was taken aback. And he said, "That is how you speak to people." All the walls that I had built around myself suddenly crashed. I cried that day. I cried for the girl I no longer was. I cried for everything that PCOS had taken from me. I cried for the woman I had become. I hadn't fully processed my diagnosis or its impact on my life up until that very moment. When I asked my close friends and family members to describe me in one word, the responses were very shocking. Aggressive, bossy, difficult. That experience forced me to ask hard questions. Had I let my pain turn into pride? Had I lost sight of who I was? I spent so much energy trying to defend myself from external judgment that I had ignored an internal one. It's not true self-love. Because you see, egotism thrives in certainty. I am right. I am perfect. I am above reproach. Self-love, on the other hand, thrives in nuance. I am imperfect, but I am worthy, and I want to grow. The danger of blurred lines is that they force us to choose between absolutes. You have self-deprecation on the far right, and egotism on the far left, and then self-love somewhere in the middle. The balance is tricky. How far is too far? How do I know when to stop? At some point, in trying to work on myself, I started belittling everything I did in order to stay humble. I stopped speaking up, even though speaking was something that I absolutely loved doing. It was up until someone pointed out how quiet I had become that I realized that this was not me. I am strong-headed. I am strong-minded. And I am always looking for opportunities to speak up for myself and others. I had worked too hard to lose that. I used to be a shy and quiet kid. And then when I got to secondary school, or high school as you call it here, I forced myself to speak in front of the class. So I would stand in front of my mates, my hands shaking, my legs shaking, and I'd just be praying that the ground should open and swallow me up. But I kept at it, only to start losing all of that progress. Self-love is not about reducing yourself to please others. It's about knowing your worth, but understanding that that does not make others worthless. It's about standing firm, believing in yourself, accepting your flaws, and looking for ways to improve yourself. When was the last time you admitted you were wrong? Not to avoid conflict, but because you genuinely wanted to grow. Are your actions helping you evolve? Are they respecting the people around you? This part, self-reflection, is what makes the difference. It's what helps us get to that middle. Remember I asked, how far is too far? When do you know to stop? So you're not degrading yourself in the name of humility or being egotistic in the name of confidence. There's no perfect answer. The lines are blurred. But that's what makes life interesting. If we keep reflecting, keep growing, and keep trying to find the balance, then self-love becomes something real and not just a performance. I'm not perfect. I still stumble into egotism, especially when my health takes a toll. But I have noticed the trend, and I am making conscious efforts to avoid it. I have a solid system of amazing people around me who I trust to tell me when I've started slipping up again. Accepting that you are in the wrong is very hard. Trust me. But with time, you start to appreciate it. As for self-love and I, we are best friends, I think. Maybe close. I remember I sent a voice note to a friend the other day, and it went something like this. The breeze just blew, and I smell so good. Wow. So I leave you with this. Love yourself deeply, but love yourself honestly. Never, ever be afraid of constructive criticism, and always, always look for ways of improving yourself. I like to think of it this way. If you really love a plant, you want to see it grow and flourish, right? So tend to your garden. The greatest relationship you will ever have is with yourself. You are stuck with you for life. And how terrible it will be to be stuck with a person that you don't even like for the rest of your life. Treat yourself with respect and dignity. You deserve it. And in doing so, you will not only create a space for others to do the same, but grow into a better version of yourself. Looking back, I'm glad I stumbled upon that Reddit post. It really made me think. But I guess it's in the name of the community after all. Deep thoughts. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Can we snap our fingers for the sister? All right. I think that this was like, yeah, this was one of the best. To be honest, this was one of the best because, whoa, many of us are struggling with that one, especially there by admitting we are wrong. Whoa. Admitting we are wrong is a very difficult one because, I think that many of us admit that we are wrong to avoid conflict. Or to keep pushing the narrative of let's fight. And many of us just say like, okay, I'm so sorry. I was wrong. Okay, cool. And it's supposed to just go away. The problem is that some other people, they need venting sessions, you know. You don't just say sorry and then we just dump down the lights and then, okay, so what am I going to do with it? I've noticed this one, right? When we have heated arguments with bestie and I. When we have heated arguments and then the conversation is shut down with, I'm sorry, right? I'm so sorry. I wronged you. I absolutely wronged you and I fully understand your emotions and I'm so sorry. And, usually when I give this, right? And he is like livid, it is more of, okay, so what now? You know? The apology is what you needed, right? You want the apology and then you want recognition and then you want accountability. But when it's given, then what? Then do your emotions magically just become better? Or do you just keep thriving on the negativity? There is this sense of anger that still lingers, right? And there's this sense of being unhappy and not having said everything that you wanted to say. And because it was shut down with an apology. And it's not that it was shut down necessarily. It was, you anticipated an apology to come after 3 hours and then the apology came in 10 minutes. So you have 3 hours worth of content within you that is now not befitting to release because the argument was given, in your context prematurely. Right. And then you still stay with that. So can we maybe also work on receiving apologies and then changing our demeanor and our anger. And then also sometimes, right. And this is now from my part, the lack of understanding why someone is upset. And that one is a difficult one because this person keeps repeating. And you don't get it. And it has always been the question of, do you not get it because I'm saying it? Or do you not get it because you don't want to listen to me? Or do you not get it because you genuinely don't get it? Because if it was somebody else, because when somebody else says it in the exact same words even, right? Then you get it instantly. There are many bad habits out here that we have to work on. And one of the bad habits that our previous speaker was talking about is understanding the difference between self-love and egotism. Sometimes, right, that whole I'm the best and I'm great and I'm always right and I'm always and I'm good and I'm, right? That is egotism to some degree. And if you don't understand why you have it, look within yourself and ask yourself when it started and why it started. Because sometimes, right, when we figure that out, we will know why it's there and why it was formed and why it's so strong. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, quickly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you...
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Pulling Heartstrings with the Matriarch as we bid you guys farewell. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about bad habits. And this is our last edition of the conversation around bad habits. I think that we have exhausted it and we have learned tremendously from our own experiences and the experiences of others and also from speakers that have a tendency to know what they're talking about usually when they come out and speak. So I'm saying a farewell to you and I'm bidding you guys goodbye and I'm saying ciao ciao, au revoir, nashi cheke, bye, because whoa, whoa, whoa. Let's work on ourselves, right? Let's work on ourselves because life is too, yeah, like the previous speaker was speaking points there. Kucha, life is too short and life is too long to be stuck with a person that you don't even like and that person is you. So let's work on ourselves. Let's work on ourselves because we can. Let's work on ourselves because it is the correct thing to do. Let's work on ourselves simply because we owe ourselves that much. We are the greatest love affair that we'll ever have. And we are the greatest loves that we will ever have. And we are the only ones that are in our corners constantly. We know ourselves better than we know anybody else. And even though we are figuring ourselves out, right? With time, it gets better. It gets better, it gets better, it gets better. And when it gets better, we will see that one day, with age, right? We'll see that one day, we'll look at ourselves and we'll say, oh, I was such a mess. And I'm so grateful for not being a mess anymore. Because nobody wants to be messy. Nobody wants to be messy. Nobody wants to be in a bad space. Nobody wants to not be okay, because it is only logical that we find peace. From me, the matriarch, I say bye-bye to you because I love you.